flyover state of film was shot in front of a live studio audience.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Flyover State of Film. As always, with me, my boys, Brian the Viking, Jackie Daytona, and a cell phone.
It's me.
Who's very happy to be here.
How you doing, old chap? Daytona, Jackie Daytona.
A human beer, please.
One human.
See them driven before you.
Alcoholic.
Hear the lamentations of their women.
How's it going, boys?
We're good.
Are we happy and excited to be here in another Halloween special?
I'm so excited.
I'm thrilled. I went hard on this costume for no apparent reason. I got to give a big shout out to Harrison, whose donations include all my Nerf weaponry that I then painted and created these. I call this one, what's it, Doombringer and Hope Slayer. So that's my,
I gotta give a shout out to all my coworkers. I've been a belligerent asshole to them this entire week to really get into character.
Well, who did you sexually harass?
I've been running away.
All the NDAs have been signed. I cannot talk about it.
These teeth are actually going to
TJ
come out,
is know? Like an embodiment of this torture that is his life. Like, he's trapped inside of a cell phone in his mind and now in his body.
Yeah.
It's very existential costume for TJ this year.
He has to fix him all day, and now he is one.
He has become the thing he hates most.
It's a Black Mirror episode.
Press my button, you know what I mean?
Shit.
It's a Black Mirror episode.
I'll dial for some takeout, if you know what I'm saying.
I
got excited for some taint, but didn't happen. She gave me a taste, now I want it all. I don't know if you've been a fan of us for the last 4 years. Question: why? But more importantly,
for punishment.
Yes, you've probably know that Halloween is like our special holiday. But biggest episodes, usually our longest episodes. In the past, we've
to Christmas.
Each taken a franchise, gotten very drunk and discussed and ranked those franchises. But just like Kanye, this year we're taking a left turn.
Can we not do just like Kanye right now?
Exactly.
What is it? You're dressed as Bill Murray, you're referencing Kanye.
Like Kanye.
What are you trying to do for Halloween this year?
Exactly like Kanye.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you feel about Andrew Tate?
I miss you, bro. Come back to Twitter.
Come back.
Boys.
I need your guidance. I feel lost. We're taking a left turn. This time around, we're doing a horror top 10.
Top 10.
Each horror.
Legal disclaimer. This is our top 10s. So if you don't like them, go fucking make one yourself.
Yeah, these are personal favorites, you know.
Yeah.
But also, mine is definitive.
Yes, exactly.
Mine is not definitive because it will change any day.
So how about Joe or whoever wants to take it? Your process to determine your top 10. How about you give me a little bit of background?
So my top 10, I really wanted it to mix it in with all sort of ranges of horror. So some psychologicals, some classics, some horror comedies, and then all so much put into it is rewatchability factor and how many times I've seen it and how just generally how much I enjoy it. It's truly put together as a favorite. And some of it is, pre-warning, sometimes cliche. Like I would think about something to throw it off and then be like, well, no, I can't remove X to put in, you know, Y.
Yeah, you can't put X, you know.
That's right, a great X movie. Is a movie, but...
Yeah.
Put in Pearl. But yeah, that's my process. It was very, like, I took 30 movies, roughly, what came to my head first, listed them out, had some things refreshed to see if it was like, oh, yeah, and then if it thought that. And then you made us put Evil Dead 2 in each one, and that was a real curveball, because really, like...
Yeah, we didn't explain that part of the game.
It was a real...
No, we'll get there.
Yeah, that was a real handicap to how does this go.
Because I don't know about anybody else, but I don't think Evil Dead was in my like immediate top 10 when I was thinking about my top 10, but I took it seriously.
Yeah, no, and I feel like I at least felt like after rewatching it, I was like, oh, fuck, this movie slaps, but we'll get there eventually. Brian, was your process different than Joe's? Where it's pretty much
only one difference specifically that I wanted to mention, because it's just a little caveat that I wanted to make. I actually did a top 10 on my old show, DVD Bunker.
Drink.
So anytime you guys mention one from your list that was on that episode, I'll be bringing it up. No. But in all seriousness, I wanted to not repeat myself, give a chance, because it had a lot of, like, classics, what I would consider classics on it. So give myself a chance to, like, put some more recent stuff on there, on this list. So I said I would have no repeats, but I still tried to, like, be true to, I didn't force anything. I tried to look out for recency bias. There was some stuff I had left off that one that now I think has been out long enough that made it. So, There's probably some that should be on here and that may be on your guys' list depending on how you play it, but they were too horror sci-fi for me, and if I had to add one, I'd had to add them all, and it would have eaten up like a third of my list. So
a lot of James Cameron.
Well, the point is like, there might be, Brian, this doesn't represent Brian's favorite movies. I know what Brian's favorite movies are. Ridley no, you Scott. Don't. You don't know me. Don't think you know me.
Tia, you have any differences from this two?
No, well, I kind of got stuck with kind of same thing as Brian as I'm going, because this list took me months to do. And I really
this guy's been diligently serious. Working. You should have been sending us notes.
Note-taking. Comparing them.
But I would get caught up, like, either in the sci-fi horror ones that I'm sure we'll mention at some point in time. And then even I got locked into, like, your cliche horror films, like, and when people say horror, especially when it comes on Halloween, it's slasher horror. Yeah,
I got caught up in the same thing.
Like,
you're like, oh, well, I have to add one from this franchise because it's just, like, iconic, you know?
But even then, at that point, I'm like, after I got, like, a big picture of films in front of me and they're categorized, like, slashers and sci-fis and stuff like that, I was just like, the slashers, honestly, maybe not even, like, most of the slashers that you expect, maybe not even top 25.
They have a lot of like background watchability, but like, are they the best horror movies? Not always.
No, yeah, so that's true. Why like my list has become a little more favorite than.
Yes. Oh, absolutely! I think it should be because to argue best is fucking folly. Because
I love best, horror movies it's... that are one watch, great scare, but like, am I gonna sit down one day and put that movie back on? Probably not. Will I recommend it to somebody as a horror movie as one of their first watches? Absolutely, but it's not one that, like...
It's like, I'm going to lay my cards out a little bit here. It's like, I recently just watched Autopsy of Jane Doe. I know it's been out for a while, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I was like, oh, that creeped me out. I loved it. I saw it a week ago. I can't put that in my top 10.
Right.
Maybe if I go revisit it to be like, oh, I want to spook, you know... next year, a couple of years, sure, that might inch its way in, because I did really get that much, but...
Yeah, that happened to me with His House.
His House was really movies. Good.
I panicked, I saw His House was going to get taken off Netflix, and it was just like Netflix UK.
Yeah,
like,
it's going to on BBC TV there.
Or something. I was like, what? What? Don't do that?
So, my process was pretty much the same, but I did the asshole move of just sitting down and gut write down all the horror movies that I love, and ended up with legit 110 movies in a spreadsheet. So then I went to, I Googled horror subgenres. And LA Film School had 10 subgenres, which was perfect. I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to use this category. So I put categories next to my 110 movies, put them in buckets, then realized that gore could suck my dick, and I eliminated gore. So I did two psychological horror movies. And that's
like,
pretty much
like gore's whatever, but it's never going to be your favorite.
Yeah. No. I don't have any splatter, I can tell you that much.
Like, I mean, I don't think I do,
but you never know. I have Evil Dead 2 on here.
Well, I guess Evil Dead 2 is on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll enjoy a movie with gore, but like Hostel or Saw won't never make my top 10. It's just gore porn.
Yeah.
All right. So, how about we start with our resident horror? Like the so, let's give a little bit of a background first. We'll each say our top 10. We're gonna start from 10 to first, obviously.
Just do round robin, right?
Yeah. If somebody has that same pick at a higher seed, we're gonna save it, save the discussion, or save like the talk till the higher seed. Like our boy said. Evil Dead 2 was picked as the movie that we were actually going to discuss in this episode. Joe came up with the idea to force everybody else to put them in their top 10. So if Evil Dead is your 10, then we'll start the discussion. If not, whenever it falls, then we're actually going to talk about Evil Dead. So I'll put
whenever we get to its highest level, whoever has it highest, that's what we'll talk
about. Yeah, I'll put the time mark there. That's the only time mark I'm gonna put. I'm not gonna put time mark for all the fucking other movies. So that's the one. If that's
we're
the one
about
that you came
40
for,
plus movies here, and they're gonna be like, yeah. Oh, can I get a timestamp?
Well, yeah, no. Timestamp for Evil Dead 2 is down there. So Joe, like how about you start with
it? All right, you want me to start? Mm-hmm. All right, so I gotta take these teeth out. I can't talk with them in.
Jackie Daytona.
It has no more teeth. But to lead this off,
I'm a phone.
It's actually it's weird. I think a lot of my honorable mentions, which we'll get to the end, would fit better in a 10 spot. But I really wanted to put horror remakes are such a prevalent, I think, category, and some are done really well. And so at 10. One that I've watched maybe a dozen times, I absolutely love. I put the Fright Night remake at 10. I find that movie incredibly enjoyable. Yeah. It has, it's not scary.
R.I.P. Anton.
But it does take itself a little more serious.
If somebody else has Fright Night remake in their top 10?
No. I didn't think so.
Joe, take it away. That's your discussion.
So yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to put it in there. I was like going back and forth, and I was going back and forth some, you know, I would say real more traditional picks, but I was like, it's good. I connect more with that remake than I do the original. The original is a great fucking movie, right, too. And it's, I remember showing it last year to Laura and Sam, and I was like, oh, it's like kind of fun and like more like horror comedy. And they watched it and they're like, no, this is pretty serious with some fun elements. And I was like, great. So, and it, I think it's a great representation of a vampire movie, and as a resident vampire,
excellent David Tennant performance.
He steals it. He steals the movie. I think
I mean, it's crazy. You get Toni Collette in there, Mogan Poots, Dave Franco, if you're a fan of that type of thing, and then
like
the last that type of thing,
Dave Franco,
the last big role for
the niche taste.
Class, I think the fucking guy from Superbad. Other than I don't know what else he was in, role model,
He shows up as a really creepy teacher in that that Dustin.
Oh, you're talking about McLovin, right?
He yeah, that movie
him.
that
he's in This Is the End as himself, you know.
Wait, or Paramount? That I forget the name of it. That it's some rom com that Dustin from Stranger Things is in. It's not really a rom com.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He shows up as like the creepy teacher trying to like hit on the chick. He's like, you're kind of like adult. So anyway, talk about a real horror movie. But yeah, Fright Night remake, absolutely adore it. I kept taking it off my list, and it kept coming back onto it.
I mean, fuck, alone that one scene alone where he's getting his neighbor, the younger girl, out of his house for the first time,
the
walk around in the downstairs, and you know, Colin Farrell with the apple, it's like the funniest thing for me is that just he knows what he's doing. Colin Farrell, like
my favorite
penguin shit you give him, but like that him with an apple, and especially one of our favorite lines me and my buddies do to each other every time we see each other, like, hey guy. That's all he does. The whole time.
Yeah. Hey, guy. You got a sixer?
Yeah, got a sixer.
I'll double it for you and your mom. But my favorite thing about Colin Farrell's performance in that, and these teeth gotta go fucking out, is how he does act feral. Like feral Colin Farrell. Yeah, but he acts like sniffing around and like he acts like an animal when the vampire shit comes out.
He couldn't control it if he had to.
Like him not getting invited inside the house and he's all like twitchy about it and kind of looks more like an addict. Like I don't know if like has ever like stood at like your like doorway and you're like, all right, like I'm good. Have a good day. Like that.
All right.
But yeah, that's 10. I thought it would come in. List only gets more cliche. All
right, TJ, you're 10.
That's a great pick for me. That's one that I wouldn't have never expected even from someone like you, Joe. And that means nothing more bad. You know what I mean? For me, let's just start off, boys. I love the movie. It's a good one. It's fine. This is going to be real quick because I know some of you have it lower. But it's nowhere near Army of Darkness, which even for a horror comedy isn't even my top 25. So I had to put this at number 10, Evil Dead 2. A great film, scary film, but it's not in my top.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
That's fair. But we're going to push it because I think I have the highest.
Ooh.
Brian.
Ooh, number 10 for me. This was, I had to like check myself and be like, this is an older movie, but I actually only have seen it within the last couple of years, but I've watched it like two or three times. I got the Blu-ray, like one of those ones I had to have it, and the price was right. Wicker Man, 1973.
Oh, yeah.
I almost put it there.
You could watch A Flyover State of Fear with Morgan Robinson.
Take a drink.
Take a drink.
I broke sobriety.
Yeah, I almost put it there. I was like, this or the other one that I ended up taking. This is such a good movie.
Directed by a guy named Robin Hardy, who only had two other directing credits, I noticed, and one was from 2011. It was like a sequel called The Wicker Tree. Did not have the greatest reviews.
No. He made two movies.
It's got the iconic, masterful Christopher Lee, who is fucking fearless, right? Like, dude had already done his Hammer horror movies at this point, and then it's just like, I'm gonna be the leader of a weird sex cult. At the end of the movie, I'm gonna be prancing around in a dress, and like,
he's the reason why that movie was able to like get off the ground to get
right, made. Right. Like, he used his name to help that movie get made, and I just love it's got that like. There's a great documentary on Shudder about folk horror, if you get a chance to watch it, but it's like one of the first iconic folk horror movies of like, it's all in the bright daylight, but it's still like, I mean, God, there would definitely obviously be no Midsummer without Wicker Man. And yeah, totally threw me. Yeah. Never knew. Somehow I had heard about the Wicker Man a bunch of times, knew about the remake, knew about the original. No one had, the world had kept the beautiful secret that it is a horror musical. And the music slaps. It rocks. It's awesome. Like, it's so good.
And it
it's
has
great. It's really
and
great.
It has legitimately one of the most terrifying and nerve-wracking endings of any movie that I've ever shook me.
It's like there's different ways to look at it. Like
there's too many ways to look at it.
You can look at it from the outside of like the only reason it's scary is because the dude who comes to the island is a weird prude about everything.
That's
like,
why I
you know
it was...
he's a weird freak. They're just living their life in a way that works for them.
No, I thought it was scary because
that island and everything. Like
I thought it was scary because he's like legitimately asking for help, and they're just like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I know what you mean. No, I mean, the ending is scary, but I'm just talking about, like, in general, the vibe of the movie.
I saw this.
No,
I watched it for the first time because of Fear, and I thought the same thing, though. Like that different perspective of this is just their normal culture.
Like, he's the invader. He's the one acting like an asshole and coming in being all judgy. And like,
I proposed this question to Morgan, and I want to pose it to you guys.
Where did you propose it?
Do you think the movie should be called something else, and the imagery should not be of the Wicker Man and the burning because that is the end stinker? Because
yeah,
I think that's the case.
More, I agree that that'd be cool. Surprising. That's just the way that movies were marketed back then. Like,
yeah, no, I get it. I just
they gave it all away right up front. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, obviously, I would prefer it to be like something else.
Yeah,
you know,
it would have been
more cryptic.
Yeah, but I mean, now in 2022, it would have been like, you won't expect a twist ending in
the scariest movie since The Exorcist.
All right, so great pick. I love it. So part of the categories was comedy. Joe went with a comedy. I'm going to go with a comedy. And I was in between, like, the obvious one, but I kind of enjoy more the cop version of that movie, which is Hot Fuzz. So I didn't go with Sean. And I went with one movie that legitimately surprised me. When I saw a trailer, I thought it was dog shit. And I was forced by my wife and my mother to go watch it because my mom is a horror fan. The Cabin in the Woods.
Love Cabin in the Woods. Great. That movie, in theaters.
Yeah.
Great, I saw it in great theaters. Experience.
Super surprised by that. I did not expect the setup. I did not expect the execution. I really didn't expect to laugh as much as I did. And yep. Just like as a horror like nerd, like when they're in the facility and you're seeing all those different monsters,
pointing out all the different references, like all that's Hellraiser, yes, there, all so that, you know, like
the amount of people.
And this guy, Brian, you probably know the name. I'm blanking. Step brother's dad.
Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins.
Also, a great Let Me In. The
yes.
Let Me
yes.
Remake.
Well, it's also an honorable mention. Richard Jenkins' comedic timing in that movie is pitch perfect. Like
he's an incredible comedian. One of those guys who like sailed under the radar in like boring character actor parts for so long until like people started realizing how good he could be, and now he gets used properly.
He does have a great Oscar nominated movie called The Visitor.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Shape of Water.
No, he was nice.
Fish fucking movie.
But yeah, and it has a great ending too. Like, and it also is like an Evil Dead, adjacent.
What I love about that movie is that for like normies, like non-movie, like not even horror, but non-movie people, they still to this day do not. They're like, oh, just a horror movie, and they go, what is this? Because I've had so many people go, do you know? Did you know that? Did you know?
Seen that? Like Kevin in the Woods.
Like I remember people left the movie theater.
Even knowing that there was more to it, and like they were drawing me in. When the first time I watched it, when it ended up being the like zombie torture family who gets picked, and that whole attack, I was a little disappointed. I was like, oh, this is what it's gonna end up being. I was like, I figured it was just a budget thing, and that's what, you know, they had a cool idea, but they could only actually show. And then when they broke off in the third act, I was like, oh, okay. I'm not 100%. I didn't like memorize my list, but I'm pretty sure Cabin of the Woods made it to my first top 10.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Search DVD Bunker if you want to check that out.
Ooh, Joe, shot. Everybody drinks.
Take a shot.
Joe, well, how about we take us down to number nine?
Push.
All right. So Evil Dead is number nine for Joe. We're going to push it.
It should have been 10. It could have been 10, but I thought it deserved a little more respect than the horror remake. So that's why it sits at 9.
Oh.
Although it is of itself a horror remake.
That is true.
Yeah, a reimagining.
Okay.
I'm going to go with something that's right up my alley. It's a TJ alley. I swap between 8 and 9.
So nobody's going to push it. Nobody's going to push this one.
This one ain't going to be on anybody's list.
We'll see. But I like people getting eaten by things on screen. It's one of my favorite things. And like, you can only be so scared of Jaws, especially if you're never going to go in the water. But what you have to do, no matter what, is walk on land. And guess what can fuck you up when you're walking on land, baby? Tremors.
Yeah.
And honorable mention, baby, is on my list.
It's up there. It's on my list for the simple fact is I will put it on at any point in time, at any part of the film, and just watch it. Then maybe even restart it, depending on how late I got into it.
You can watch an episode of Flyer State of Film.
Straight up. Yes, you can.
I don't know if I mentioned, and it's funny you brought up Jaws, because I always thought, much like Jaws, which gets kind of mentioned in horror movies, I never thought Jaws or Tremors was horror. It's all more thriller adventure to me, but I definitely, I mean, it counts, like, fully, nobody's trying to, but, like, in my personal, I love Tremors, but I never would have thought to put it in my horror list, I guess.
Yeah, like, I left Jaws off my list,
Yeah.
For the record, because I'm like,
no, yeah. Hear that John Williams score in the third act and be like, this is a horror movie. It's like,
I included Tremors because one of the subgenres is like monsters, and I started
Tremors
like,
is straight up in the horror is genre.
Yeah,
but it also it definitely falls into like your adventure and also that early 90s. Like, there's a feel good to it, other than like, because the first 25 minutes when they're figuring out what's happening, you don't see it. You think they're just the little snakes, but like, we as viewers who are watching the film know it's something bigger, but like the gentleman who gets eaten with all the sheep, the two workers who are working on the electrical wires, the avalanche, and the guy just getting pulled and wrapped around.
Oh yeah, they do a good build, sure.
Yeah, they build, and then the guy on the tower, old man, old Bill or whatever it is, with the, you know, he's like, you'd hide from, some guy's camping down there even though he has a Winchester, and you're like, oh, good point, because something, he might was scared of something, but whatever was that was not scared of him, which is always gets me to this day, and especially when they do the close-up in the old man Bill, whatever his name is, when he's up top all dried out and just dehydrated and dead, it's just like, oof, it'll always get me. Number 9.
It's a good fucking movie. It's fun. We had fun discussing about it. Yes. Brian, number nine.
I don't think anybody's going to have this one on their list. That's okay. I don't want, I wanted my list to embody.
Yeah, you're unique. You're a unique flower. We get
I'm
it. Unique. Get it.
I'm a beautiful snowflake. It's true. I rewatched this just recently and was like reminded of what an effect it had on me as a teenager. And that's Interview with a Vampire.
Oh.
Leviathan.
It didn't even make my honorable. Yeah.
No, I mean, hey, you know, it's okay. It's not for everybody. And it's a 90s. It's a bit of a relic too. But, like when I was a teenager, you know, I had my version of Universal Monsters, which is like this movie. I like Bram Stoker's Dracula now, but I didn't really get into it back then. Interview with a Vampire was like my vampire movie. And then I had Wolf with Jack Nicholson, and I had Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the Kenneth Branagh one with Robert De Niro. And those were like that was my jam.
That who was your wolf?
That is such a
Jack Nicholson wolf.
Oh, I never seen that. I want
to. If you're about to talk shit about Frankenstein, man,
Frankenstein movie is rough.
No, that's a classic, man. That is Kenneth Branagh doing his epic, like, he's like Shakespeare shit with, it's so good. You're out of your mind. Yeah, the De Niro's the monster. It's got Ian Holm. It's got, it was the first time I ever saw.
All right, tell us about the gay vampires in an interview.
Anyway.
Yeah, we're talking about.
Okay, so like when I was this age, you know, I'm a teenager when that comes out. And I knew vampires, you know, vampires, they suck your blood. They're like Dracula. But like, Interview with a Vampire introduced me to the eroticism of vampires. And like, how they were so horny. You know,
that was like not a thing. So good in that movie.
That's definitely one of the best Tom Cruise performances.
Is that when he finally got?
Yeah, because he doesn't have to show that much emotion.
Well, and because it was the first time they let him be a villain, which is his natural state. Like
he's fun in that movie. Like I revisited it last year. Like he is so much fun. I think you and Brian, we were texting through the whole thing. Me revisiting it. Like
yeah, I like and Brad Pitt is like kind of a blank slate, but it's what he needs to be because he's your avatar in the story.
Yeah, like old
Kristen Dunst just like destroys. She's on the screen with all these giant stars and just swoops in. You forget Christian Slater is even in the movie, but he is.
Oh wow, yeah.
Antonio Banderas
is in it. Like,
and also, shout out to Stephen Ray, who's in some of the worst movies I've ever seen, like Fear.com and The Fourth Underworld. But he's incredible as like the dude who's just under Antonio Banderas, who like leads the kind of like revenge plot against Lestat. And
hey, man, I like Fear.com, dude.
Oh,
I want to revisit Fear.com because it's such a funny concept that it can't be good, and that's what I like to value my time with is things like that.
But I don't know, I guess there's just like a vampire movie for every generation, and this was my Twilight, and I was as into it as girls were into Twilight. So,
do you have any interest in watching the TV show?
No, but I bet it's good. Like, I don't think it looks bad, I just don't really like, what's it,
Hulu?
I think it's on Apple, isn't it?
Apple? I thought it was maybe Apple, I don't know.
I think you're right.
I didn't think I had access to it, so I kind of didn't really worry about it too much. I would probably maybe give it a chance if I did have access to it. I mean, Anne Rice's work is interesting. I did not enjoy Queen of the Damned, but it didn't, you know.
Hey, R.I.P. Aaliyah.
Yeah.
All
right, my number nine is the paranormal one. I could have chosen like, I don't know, Sixth Sense and stuff like that, that, you know, fall in that, the others, or, but when I just kept looking at the list, even though it could have been also under the comedic one, The Frighteners. I fucking love, so love, good. Love, so love good. That movie.
That. It's not on my list. God damn it. So good.
Brian, it was on your bunker list.
I know it was.
It was? All right, I guess I'm
just, one of the rare episodes of Bunkers I've watched in its
I am history. Just, I'm just, I'm Brian.
What are you trying to say, Joe? That's not exactly a glowing endorsement, you know?
I've seen them all. I've seen them all.
That's right. That's right. TJ's a real friend.
If you were still putting it out, I would watch it.
I'd watch it now. I have more time.
We did a main episode on The Frighteners, so we don't need to spend that much time on it. It's funny. It's Peter Jackson. It's Michael J. Fox.
Maybe at his pure, because like I love Back to the Future. It's great, but like this might be Michael J. Fox. Like,
well, this was like right when Sin City was a huge hit too, and like he was ready to come back to movies. And like Frighteners wasn't a huge hit, but it was strong enough, and he was good enough in it that
he's,
I think
he's a fucking.
He was about to launch again, and I legitimately think that he knew he was about to take off again, and he couldn't handle. And he knew he wouldn't be able to handle it. He was like, "This is the time I have to reveal that I'm sick." Because I'm about to like make the leap again and start up again, and really like, and he knew it was going to be too much, which is just brutal. I mean, one of the greatest Hollywood what ifs. Because man, what a loss! Like,
you know what's oh yeah, I fucking love Michael J. Fox. He's the best.
Great about The Frighteners, and I know it's a TJ favorite, but it has the same feeling, even though completely different, as the Casper movie that came out at the same time.
it does feel like a little bit more serious version of Casper.
And I mean that in the best way possible. Like it's like they shot Casper here, and The Frighteners was here.
It's like the next town over is where Casper takes place.
And like, despite the movie not being like fully terrifying, I argue that walkthrough, when they're walking through the hospital and he's just murdering people left and right.
You're seeing the flashbacks are really scary. Yeah. Like, and like upsetting to the point where Frighteners could have been a movie I showed to Harrison younger, if not for those scenes. There's some intensity in that.
All right, we're rocking and rolling.
Shout out Jake Busey and, the mom from E.T. whose name is
Jake Busey. Jake Busey was just in something that I watched in jail. It's great. He's good in it, though.
His dad's number eight. Yo.
Ah, shit. This is going quick.
Jackie the Tone.
Yeah, number eight. Now we're getting into something that could easily have been two in my list. Oh, wait. No, eight. Sorry. Blah, blah, blah. Number eight is a movie that has only, and I mentioned it before, it has only gotten scarier to me as the older I've gotten. If you asked me when I was 13, I would have said it's like The Frighteners in the sense of, oh, a kid could watch it, it's chill, and the older I get, it's scary. That's Poltergeist. Anyone?
Oh. I'm right there with Joe. We have the same number, same pick.
Perfect. You go. Poltergeist at number eight? Amazing. Do it up. Talk, boys.
So
talk amongst yourselves.
So, TJ, I put Poltergeist at eight because I always say it. It's like, when I was younger, it was like, throw it on, fall asleep to it, do not care. The older I get,
the scarier.
The more I'm like, it's
about the horrors of buying a home.
It's just that, and there's like something about like not being able to like protect your family and like maintain that is like
my favorite creepy thing about it is like, one, it has those, which I was young when this came, or I wasn't even. Was it 87 maybe? I didn't see it. I was like 92. I was like six maybe or something like that. But it has, because I don't know when this started, but like it has the classic scene.
82.
It's scared me to say, because it's not even like it's scary, but it's like a jump scare. The mom's going through the kitchen. The camera stays on her one track. She walks through.
Oh, it's so good.
Walks back with the stairs all stacked up. And her reaction, even though it's the most slightest thing, is like something that you would see. Everything about this movie, Poltergeist, which makes it so scary, but also one of my favorite horror movies of all time, is that family feels like my family. It's just that weird, like, Spielberg. Like, the dad's kind of outward.
Toby Hooper?
No, I just meant, like, the, like, the
vibe. No, but it's just that thing of people say that, like, Spielberg ghost-directed Poltergeist.
Yeah. But TJ's talking about that is a Spielberg thing. Like, it feels like your family.
Your family, yeah. And, like, and the music.
Oh, Spielberg loves his daddies.
But, like, I didn't see, this was, like, one of those movies that, like, when we have a sleepover, the parents don't think it's a big deal to throw on. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's kind of scary, but also at the end, they get out, everyone survives. One of the best scenes.
It's like the clown.
Back out the hotel room.
The clown wrapping around. It's like, that's creepy,
but
like,
the dude
you get
with
over
the chicken
it.
And the maggots and the classic face rip apart.
It's so good. It's so good.
That's will always be, because I was like sitting there, I was like, ghost movies, like, I'm not gonna name any because you guys might have them, but I had to have some of them in there because
it's representation.
Those are the ones that scare me the most, because I don't know about y'all, but I believe in that type of thing. So like, that
I just like
Tremors.
but I like it. It's just one I find myself like chill, get it when we talk about it now. Like, I get chills about it because like, something about it creeps me out, and it did it when I was 15.
Yeah.
And that's weird in the sense of it should only not get scarier.
And like the point of like, there's good ghosts, there's bad ghosts, the ghosts don't care, then there are ghosts that are mad that obviously, you know, the land developers fucked up.
Kayla Ann, get out of the light.
That young woman. What is the movie that she's also in, 16 Candles?
Is she in 16 Candles?
Yeah, she plays the wedding.
Yeah, she's in another one. She's the same voice and everything.
Yeah,
She's not doing a voice in Poltergeist.
That's just her voice.
She's a star. Super creepy.
Best shows.
I love TJ that you have that at the same spot too, because it was one of those ones. Like I said, I think you and I say I kept taking things off and adding. It needs here for this reason.
Got to be there. Absolutely.
And.
All right, Brian, come on, let's say the same pick as me, though. Come on, baby. Like, we're the same as them. We're good.
We're just like them. Okay, well, do you have Evil Dead 2 at number 8?
I have it at 7.
Oh, okay. Well, I have it at number 8. So, do you want to talk about it now or do you want to wait around?
I'll wait around.
My number eight
is a psychological thriller that every time I watch it, it fucks me up the same way. I don't know why. Like, I know almost all the beats, and I know what's going to happen, yet it always fucks me up. It's Jacob's Ladder.
Oh, nice. Wow. Good pick.
Ooh,
yes, it's been a long time. I need to rewatch soon.
I haven't watched it since I was a child.
It'll fuck you up. At least it fucks me up. It's very well made. It really does play well with the is this reality bit, but in a way that It's just him selling it. Like, Tim really fucking goes all out during that movie to the point that you really buy that he is going fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And it really does dive into a lot of, like,
the party
you
scene.
A lot of good social
commentary. Tanya, Pruitt-Taylor, Vince got a good cast in that one.
Yeah, no, it's a great cast as well. It's very well made, and the ending is fucking heartbreaking. It's a good,
well, and, like, maybe good, one of the first, like, I mean, like, not one of the first, obviously, but, like, Not to give anything away, but what a switch, what a shift on you. Like, I mean, talk about one that felt like it came out of nowhere, at least the first time I watched it, you know?
It's one of the, I know we're going to all talk about different movies today. It's probably, like, if there's a top three most adult films, it's just a movie for fucking adults.
It's pretty horned. You got Elizabeth Pena in it, your movie's going to be hot. Like, that's just the case. Yeah. Facts.
Oh, I meant like mature.
Mm.
Not.
But,
not
I know what you meant, Joe.
Like, but not like horny. Do I make you horny, baby? Jackie Day.
Have you done? No, you've done Austin Powers outside of the pod, but you haven't done it in the pod, right?
As a 3 year old, in the third grade, I had a hand sewn Austin Powers costume.
Oh yeah, we've all seen the picture. It's adorable. Yeah.
Hand sewn.
I would do it again as an adult, but you can't hit those highs.
All right, so now everybody knows that once it circles back to me, we're all talking Evil Dead, But we'll, how about we talk about
that? You know what? That's like the seventh inning stretch. We'll get in there. We'll get in.
Yeah, we'll,
yeah, let's just recall Evil maybe Dead maybe now, and then we'll...
Like, what's we'll round going. Seven, and then we get back to you, Seth. It'll be time to talk. Yep.
Okay, we'll, so... We're halfway. Seven, at seven, I have Child's Play 2.
Oh. Push!
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 Push! We're okay. Pushing it. Push it, baby. Push it real good.
So good.
You know how hard it was to only have one of these because of our friendship?
I always did that to myself. It's like, I'm only going to put one per franchise because, like, it gets hard. You know what I mean? It's like, you got to
only do one per franchise. That was another rule I set for myself.
Yeah.
One per franchise.
One rule that I tried to set for myself was if I had to do it, like, only use so many Universal Monsters, I end up using a little bit more than I expected. But for this one jumped back and forth with Poltergeist too. But until once Joe said eight, I was like, I'm keeping Poltergeist at eight. But I don't feel like this is gonna be on anyone's list. It is one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite vampire movies of all time. Has the gorsh effect, the splatter effect, the joking, the complete not knowing what it was when it started, thinking it's a bank robbery movie, and then it turns into a fucking vampire just craziness. From Dust Till Dawn.
It's not my honorable mention.
It's a good one. I love that pick. Me and Joe talked about that when we did a fear, because I love a good movie that starts as one thing, a horror movie that starts as one and flips to something else. Yeah. So good.
This is a movie for me. It's very personal. Me and my cousin, when we were like 12 years old,
it has Selma Hayek. Sure. It's already a winner.
We snuck down to our other cousins who had a shore house right underneath us, and just went through his VHSs, saw From Dusk Till Dawn, saw nudity, and just like, let's watch it. We have no idea what the hell it is.
And now you have a foot fetish.
That's why I've seen Species so many times.
I just locked in at 2 in the morning. And we just, again, I'm like, I'm thinking this is a bank rob movie. Then when it gets the titty twister and all hell breaks loose, it's...
Such a great name for a bar.
And the Cheech speech about pussy at the outside is like... iconic, right?
That's a movie that I've literally bought three times on Blu-ray because I keep forgetting I own it. So I've seen it on sale and I've gone, oh, I gotta get it. And I've done it to the point where now I know I own it.
Yeah.
One would hope.
Again, for me...
That and Catch Me If You Can.
That's true. I love that fucking movie. But this is like a rewatchability thing for me. Like, a lot of these movies on my list
super
are pure rewatchability.
The best Juliette Lewis in the Desert movie just above California?
Yes.
A little bit ahead of California.
Best George Clooney movie? Because I feel like he knows where he is in the film, and I don't know if anyone around him, because what did he do before this? ER...
Well, this was like his first big movie after becoming a star on ER. Yeah.
And my man went for it. He didn't fucking chuck it in there.
George Clooney's a ride or die. Like,
yeah,
he's a fun
best,
actor.
Best Don Mancini performance for sure. Don Mancini and his dick pistol, classic.
Tom Savini. Don Mancini, I was like, is Don Mancini in there?
I was like, wait, he'd be a shot.
If Don has a cock gun, go for you, Don. Let's go.
Yeah, you know what? I bet he does. I bet he's got a shotgun down there is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Tom Savini, an early Machete.
Yeah.
Is that Shaft?
Kind of almost like an early version of Machete.
Yeah.
If it's not
Shaft,
can we cut that out? Is it the guy who
No, it's not. It's not Richard Roundtree. It's
not Orlando Jones.
I wish I had the actor's name. I know it's not Shaft, though.
Okay. I guess.
I know you're talking about. No, he's okay. A genre. He's one of those like horror genre actors that.
Yeah.
Like...
But it's also not the guy from Dawn of the Dead. Or Dawn of the Dead.
That's Ken Foree.
It's Ken Foree. It's not Ken Foree either, though.
He was the father.
Fred Williams? Is it Fred Williams? Is that his name? Might be.
That sounds familiar, but somebody Ken Foree was the father in Keenan and Kel. Ken Foree was the father in Keenan and Kel, and when I found out later in life he was a horror icon,
holy shit.
I was like, what? That's Mr. Rockmore?
That's amazing.
Because, you know, it's just a sick, it's just, that's just like a
that's happening in real time for TJ here.
That was real. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
All right, who's up?
Brian.
Fred Williamson.
You were close, Brian.
Williamson, Fred Williams. That's what it is.
Brian, number seven.
Number seven for me. Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh. Honorable mention.
Oh, I was going to say push, but no push.
No push. You know, this actually, like, was a last minute. I almost had my list set, and then I looked over at my side. And I actually love a lot, most of those movies. Obviously Manhunter, but if I had to pick the one that is the most rewatchable, that is the most performances, that is just like the best made movie, it's hard to take it away from Silence of the Lambs. Like, yeah, just a really, like, strong, straightforward 90s thriller. Used to make them, like The Fugitive and shit. Like, just
and it is
tight and strong. And is a great crime movie, but also is legitimately horrific and gory and it's scary terrifying. And a horror film all in and of itself. Buffalo body Bill. Gross, disgusting body horror, obviously. But, like, works as just a procedural, too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, Buffalo, right. all the Buffalo scenes, Buffalo Bill scenes are fucking terrifying.
I mean, every CSI and Law and Order just stole the formula and put it in a 45-minute.
Oh, absolutely. Form. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why the Hannibal show ended up working so well. They were like, well, fuck it. We'll just come back to this format because we. But, right. Like, it mainstreamed horror long before prestige horror was a thing.
I'll never forget my dad showing my brother that too young, and then inadvertently, like, I had seen it then, like, a year or two later, because my brother was like, watch this. And my brother going, when the guy throws the jizz on her, he's like, what just happened? Because he was, like, still, like, too young.
Did not.
He like, oh, spit.
He spit on her. He spit.
A form of spit.
I mean, it took me until I was like, it took me years before I fully watched it, like, from beginning to end. I always catch it in pieces. I'm like,
she was always on basic cable.
Well, it's one of those ones that you could, like, if you're of a certain age, you just, like, have osmosis from pop culture. You just about it from being so, like, prolific, you know?
Is it, I have a question. Is it, and this is not an insult, like what TJ say, is it the Shawshank of horror movies?
I could see that.
Right, it's kind of always on TV. You could tune in, but you know it's
well, and it's like it's classy enough that like non-horror people will watch it. You know,
it's that in The Shining.
It's got that crossover appeal. You know,
other than when the guy spits on it, there's not too much that you can cut out other than the language, right?
It's
just language.
I mean, there's some gore, obviously, at the end when Lecter breaks out and he's like ripping faces.
The naked, I think there's a naked cadaver, like a dead body. Like.
And there's what's his name? Ted Levine. Shout out to Ted Levine from The Tuck. Looking
at the RuPaul's Tuck.
Is she a great big fat person?
I don't like that your voice is that close to it. All right,
it was very close.
Another mind blower growing up is that the police detective in Monk is fucking Ted Levine and his Buffalo Bill.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was like, no. That guy's adorable.
All right. So let's talk Evil Dead. TJ had a 10, Joe had a 9, Brian had an 8, I had a 7.
And I said I could have easily put mine at 10.
But you 10, 9, 8, 7, though.
Yeah, I think 10, 9, 8, 7. It could have been at 10. It could have not been on my list at all. But I think when I sat down with it, I don't think I would have put it on my list had I not watched it. But I'm not sorry it made it to 8 with a rewatch.
Explain to us why you picked it for us, and it was 7.
It's 7 because I honestly love this entire franchise. I love the first one. The first one is more of a slow build. I picked this one because it's just fucking batshit crazy, and it would have landed for a better discussion. More ha-has amongst each other. And Army of the Dead is just more of an adventure.
Army of Darkness.
Yeah, Army of Darkness. It's more of an adventure.
I gave this one extra credit because I realized that it sets up Army of the Dead a little bit better than I expected. And I was like, you know what? I love Army of the Dead. That's probably my favorite of the trilogy. And I was like, I would give this a bump.
Full disclosure, I never fell in love with the series. I've actually
fair enough.
I've rewatched the remake more than I've watched any of the original trilogy.
I watched yesterday.
The remake is one of those ones that
it's brutal.
I like. It's not bad at all, but the rewatchability of it it hits when it hits, and then once it hits, you
it's brutal. Yeah. I rewatched.
I really like the remake. I'm kind of with Joe though. Like aside, I would say Army of Darkness hit with me in the first, and then I like went back to the Evil Deads, and I enjoy them, but they're not like my top horror franchise.
I had a friend in college who was a Deadite, and I was like, and she would just talk about him, and I was like, I want to love this, and just it's not
ruining it for me.
It's just not clicking, right? Like,
yeah, I feel like it's.
Yeah, I started to watch a documentary on Shudder about the Deadites, and I was like, I can't. I was like, I could. I got about 5 minutes into it, I was like, nope.
I like the second one more than Army of Darkness myself. So I was happy you picked it. That's why I hit 9. And
I've just seen Army of Darkness more. I think Army of Darkness is just like it's Army so goofy that
it's yeah, it's fun. I feel like this is like the Evil Dead 2 is the best example of what Sam Raimi could do on mixing two genres, because Evil Dead 1 is pure horror. Evil Dead 3 is like slappy adventure, and like. You can see how he truly had this vision of what his horror movie wanted to be, and how funny it can be, and how outlandish it can be. And the thing that I really respect about this movie is like 1 hour and 26 minutes, but the movie does not waste a single fucking minute. Like legit starts, and he just.
I was watching it with Sarah, and like she legitimately was like, "Oh shit, we're just getting right into it, huh?"
Yeah
it was like, yeah.
Now that also leads to the moment where he doesn't hesitate long enough, in my opinion, before knocking his girlfriend's head off with a shovel and burying her, and showing almost no emotion about that.
No, he not only does he not hesitate to knock it off, he fucking disposes that body in 2 seconds
immediately.
Bruce Campbell don't give a fuck.
I haven't seen the first one. Because I don't do it like you guys do. I watch the movie and get it. But I feel like a lot of you watch like the first and the second if there's multiple ones and kind of get. Is Bruce Campbell more caged in the first one? I don't remember.
Yeah, definitely. The first one's more.
First one's straight up a studio.
And he really hits a stride through.
Like, right. I feel like towards the end, like his mania, like with the situation, like he tends to like break a little bit outside, but in this one he's like groovy, baby, from the very beginning. Like they knew what they wanted to do with that character, definitely. And you can tell that I think Bruce is an executive in this one, and he definitely ad lib a shit ton.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I really admire about this type of movies, like. A shit ton of other horror movies, like even The Wicker Man, for example. It's like this is is a very singular vision. It's like if somebody really wanted to make this movie, and they managed to convince a bunch of people to be like follow their vision, and you can tell that they're having a fucking blast. Like the
it seems like a lot of fun.
The blood just fucking pouring out. The dancing girlfriend with the head on the.
I was gonna say I love different types of practical effects and gags and setups that are in this movie. It's like Sam Raimi really pulled out all the stops and like all the little tricks that he had learned since the first
so
one.
Many. It's
did so many new little.
Did he make
bits.
A movie between 1 and 2?
No.
No, I was going to say, how fast did he shoot after 1? Because he must have obviously got a bump.
Well,
in the 1
comes out in what, 82 or 83?
Like
he had like 4 or
81, 81 is the first one.
Yeah, and then this one's 87, I think.
Yeah,
so he
think
had to have done so.
Yeah, he had to do something in between there for sure.
Make some money. But the budget, I mean, obviously the budget was fucking.
I want to talk a little bit about. Bruce
he did
Campbell.
Something called Crime Wave.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about Bruce Campbell just to be like. Do you think he hooked up with Sam Raimi because he was only getting, like, handsome leading men parts? And he was like, I want to do something cool and weird, and no one will hire me for that. So I got to, like, get my buddy and be buddy and, like, buddy up with this guy.
Yeah, I thought they were just film school friends, and he was,
right,
like,
right. But, like, you know, you look at Bruce Campbell, he's just such a traditionally handsome kind of leading man type.
That fucking chin.
And, like, without Sam Raimi, that's what he probably would have stayed, you know?
Yeah,
he would have probably been forgettable because he's, like, he's
been
a good actor, but not up to the level of being a leading man in Hollywood. So,
he
like,
would have been on a soap opera.
Get in.
He's
like,
he, you know, somebody that reminds me of him is, like, Nathan Dillon or the
Nathan Fillion.
Philion. I'm killing it today with names. I'm on fire.
I always think him and Patrick Warburton too should have been like teamed up.
That's similar. Yeah.
That's kind of the same actor. Like they have this, and not to like talk shit about Bruce because he's a good actor, but he's a one note actor. But that one note that he hits is very well hit. Like
he could have.
It hits it out of the park. And also like his chin lends itself to such a great practical effect makeup when he turns into the demon in the beginning and his and the eyes are like glazed with mist. No, I didn't. I saw the first episode and I was like, this is not for me.
I watched the whole first season and then I said, this is not for me.
I was just wondering.
Shout out everyone. If you like Marvel Zombie Comics, there is a comic where Ash and Howard the Duck team up.
Well, that is amazing.
There's also an Ash versus Freddy versus Jason comic if you're into that.
Oh, let's go.
I didn't know that. Can you replace
me? I have it.
I'm going to steal it.
Oh, the one. I know that we're just like breezing through it because we got a shit ton more movies.
There's no plot to Evil Dead. We know the plot.
No.
One thing
go to cabin. Dead, I read the book. Demons come. You know, there's not like, you don't need to talk about
people
the
plot. Die. People die. But the one shot that I want to shout, like, there's a bunch, like, the camera movement in this movie and the editing is fucking amazing. But the one shot that every time I see it, I go like, oh, so fucking good, is the mirror shot. When he's, like, standing in front of the mirror and then the evil Ash just pops out of the mirror and grabs him. It's so fucking well made. It's so slick every time I see it, I go like, oh, fuck, he did it so fucking well. It's like, you don't see it coming if you're not aware of it. But yeah, go ahead.
It's awesome.
I wonder if he's
really
like one of those actors who has a brother that looks exactly like him and they can just use those.
Double up. Oh, yeah.
You always forget there's actors that have like almost twins. You're like, wait, what the fuck?
Like Linda Hamilton?
Yeah,
Terminator.
Also really fun that the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness, Evil Dead 2, is one of the few, like, Bruce Campbell's like the only real, like, final guy. Guy, you know. Well, one that we respect, I should say.
And he not
and, like,
only
Devin Sawa,
well.
And he doesn't really live at the end.
I hate that guy.
Not only did he kill his girl quickly in the post of it, he wanted to fuck the new one that came along real quick.
Yeah, right? Too. He was like, I'll hook up, even though I just buried the girl I brought up here. And then he's ready to bone that girl, but then they flip back because it's like Linda's like necklace that brings him back from the brink of being a deadite and like humanizes him or whatever. So he's just horned. He's just so
real
horned.
Quick about Bruce Campbell. Did any of you guys watch the Peacock show AP Bio with Dennis?
Oh no, I knew of it.
It's not going to continue on, but in the last season, he shows up as his dad. Just basically think of Dennis Reynolds' dad was Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And it is perfect casting. He's so good in it. That's all I wanted to say. But I was listening to Bruce Campbell talk about this. It popped up the other day. And he was like, Army of Darkness is the only movie for a studio that let me be a lead. And it made no money because the studio refused to put the words Evil Dead in front of the name.
Yeah.
So no one had any idea what the movie was.
Yeah, they didn't know it was a sequel to a horror.
And you said like a horror Pee Wee Herman movie.
And he's pretty, like, rightly so, like, salty about it. He's like, tell the studios, I would love to do a movie for a studio again.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah,
Marvel.
I guess let's rate it, right? Like, if it was a normal episode.
Yeah.
Joe, well, let's go into a ratings phase.
Right, ratings phase.
Ratings phase.
I gotta put that, like, right at a... Like I said, I put it at 9 because I felt it deserved the respect over Fright Night and some others to place it. So it's a solid, like, 8-4 for me. 8-4 demon women in the crawl space.
The mom? Where's your... I buried your mom in the cellar and she's just like...
That's bad.
That was cool.
So that would be mine. I think it's great. It's just not for me, but I do think it deserves
a rating. You gave it an incredibly high score as far as I'm concerned.
For Flyover, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm thinking, TJ.
It's the circle. It's the circle.
No, it's fine. I mean, the circle's different for everybody, so when you go like this, it doesn't mean anything to me, but okay.
For me, it's a high 7, like a 7.5 shovels. Again, it's a fun horror movie. I wouldn't say great. I'm going to say fun.
I respect
that. But it is also almost a classic. If you mention the first, you're going to mention the second, which leads into the third one. It's a great trilogy to even just get into if you're horror. But for me, it's not in my top 25. I've said that again, but it is a really good, fun horror movie, especially around this holiday. 7.5.
No, wait. Brian. That's not you. What are you doing? Would you go off to take a dump or something?
Okay. Brian.
It's wild because both these guys had it rated lower than me, but somehow I think their scores are going to be better than mine. I want to put Evil Dead 2 at about a 6.5 for me. I like
Holy
Evil
shit.
Dead 2. I enjoy Evil Dead 2. I love Army of Darkness. Like, Army of Darkness is like an 8 or a 9 for me. So, I do think it still deserves its place when I'm watching it, and as far as like putting it in my top 10, wouldn't have been in my top 10 if not. But am I sorry it didn't go at the very bottom? Absolutely not. Like, I think it deserves where it landed.
Yeah, no, Sam Raimi is one of those directors that has a direct line into my funny bone, into my movie lover
penis.
There's rarely a Sam Raimi movie that I go like, this is dog shit. If at the least I enjoy them.
Yeah, like the Oz Great.
So also my rating in that being
I enjoy it.
What's your rating?
It's 8.4 as well.
Because I would say I put 8.4 because nothing that I could put in my top 10, even having it be forced in the top 10, can be less than that score.
That's fair. That's reasonable.
All right. So now we're back to the top 10. Number 6, Joe.
All right. So we are going, which actually might be the most terrifying movie on my list. Like, thing that is generally scary. I know I've been hammering this rewatchability. This is more of a, you want something fucking scary and you want to think about it and you want to feel like claustrophobic for the whole time. It's The Descent.
That's great.
Whoa, I put it in my top
10.
Okay, so I could talk about it?
Oh, yeah, go nuts.
All right. The Descent is one of the rare movies that, A, is more than its concept.
Oh, yeah.
In horror, right? Like, the concept alone of, like, we're going to send people into a cave, spelunking, and then there's...
For fun.
And then there's monsters down there. I don't want to really call them vampire. Like, there's something down there. And the vampires are the least fucking scary part of that movie.
Dude,
cannibals or monsters?
Or cannibal. Yeah. I just meant not vampire, but, like, yeah, the cave dwellers.
Yeah, almost like bat vampire in the way that they're, like, bat people.
Yeah. And I guess it's the least terrifying part, because at least when, like, and I heard this recently on that Shudder, like, 101 countdown, it's like, because you're so, like, the things crashing, right? The things crashing, and they're in there, and it's claustrophobic, and it feels real. It feels like I could get trapped in a fucking cave. At least when the monster shows up, you're like, okay, I'm in a movie. but it even starts off before that, so jarring by just watching her husband take the pipe through the fucking head while they're driving and her child being murdered. And I think about that scene when I'm driving sometime of like, this is what a car accident.
It's got that Final Destination 2 thing where you're like, see the right kind of vehicle on the road and you're like, I don't like that. I don't like it.
Like that also flips to like the fact that it goes from that, like your straight up drama to your fun, have a good time. All the girls out getting drunk. Now we're going spelunking fun. Then it goes to like, oh, this fucking looks nightmarishly scary.
From Dusk Till Dawn, same type of thing, where like you think you're watching one type of movie that is scary and intense in its own right. You know what I mean? Like a bank robbery movie with two psychos is scary. Getting trapped in a cave with people that are hurt and no way out and you're lost is scary. And then like to add an element on top of that.
The horror monster, but then it even flips itself again to almost a revenge fucking like...
Right, because then there's the... And that's another thing we'll talk about later in one of my picks too, but like when there's a personal element to it, Like the it one brings girl, a whole different level, you know?
Yeah.
The one woman is like, has a problem with her, even her tragedy. So like, she's a thorn in her side. With yeah, then TJ, like, she has to overcome her trauma to get out of this place. And
then go back and save. Well, sorry, that's
it's,
two. But.
No, that's two, but like, I am a fan
of. I'm saying you have the director's cut.
I watch the director's cut when I watch it. And the director's cut is just.
Although sad. I do like The Descent too. I love those movies where they pick up the day, same day, and
they bring her back in.
Two energy, you know.
I need to know more about this in the chat, please, because I want to hear about it.
Could I say spoiler for the director's cut then?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the director's cut is why also is she gets over this shit and like has that vision of her family and you think she gets out like she does in the regular cut,
right?
But really, it's in her head and you see this beautiful, it mimics a famous painting, a Caravaggio, where you just see light coming from one end and it's very dark. And you just see her kind of there with like the challenges of head to get out. So you don't know if she like doesn't make it.
But, oh, is it all like, the monsters out there and she has the thing and she has to go
through
them
all? Yeah, and you just see the light coming through.
Yeah,
That movie to me is.
I thought the director's cut had ended with the thing with her with the birthday cake. With birthday cake and
it. Well, she does, and then it cuts to her in
and
the.
It's, she's actually her in the with the monsters
in the cave, and the monsters in the long shot. You see the one because
the original one, she
gets out.
Takes her friend out and leaves her behind, so she can get out. Right.
The director's cut,
which leads into the sequel, which I said like again, I did enjoy.
But it's just a really like. Small movie that feels so like visceral and it's generally just scary. So I don't know, that's where that sits at. I think that's the scariest my list is gonna get at. It's at six.
TJ,
oh,
six.
All
right,
six for me. And I don't know, I didn't really think about it when it fell this way, but another vampire movie again. Would you consider it horror? Probably not. But for me, it's a scary movie. It's got vampires. It's a monster movie. The Lost Boys. We've talked about it.
Push!
That's a fun.
Oh, it's a push. Time. We got another push.
A flyer state of fear.
Oh, no, sorry. It's six, too.
Oh, you got it at six, too? Oh, look at these boys. They're in love with each other.
This hands down.
We did a flyby together about this movie, too.
This hands down to me, probably, and I know Buffy, the TV show, took its inspiration from it, but, like, the simplest but the best vampire makeup you could do without just throwing fangs on somebody. No offense, Joe.
Yeah.
That fell out.
Eyes. The
brutal.
Even the voices, like, change on them, and, like, everything about this movie, it's Yusuf, help me out here. It's
such a fun fucking movie. It's coming of age. It's very 80s in that.
It's the most 80s movie there is.
It's so fucking 80s. Just with the opening of the saxophone sex
Joel
man.
Joel Schumacher.
Yeah.
God bless him, man.
It has this
beautiful,
fun...
The beautiful homoeroticism of Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, it really does have everything. It has a lot of stuff that you can connect at different stages of your life. But when I saw it as a kid, I love the element of the kids taking down the vampires. You know, those two experts that knew everything about the vampires, Corey, just slowly turning into a vampire as well, and trying to save his brother from the elements of. The town that they just moved into, and them trying to protect their mother from this evil vampire that's trying to like make her the queen. I think is his plan, right?
Yeah. I love the turn too with the guy she's dating being the head.
And he's so unbecoming and so looks so nerdy, and then he ends up being like the leader, and it's not Kiefer Sutherland.
When you have the rewatch, when you see him come into his shop the first, like in the early in the movie, and you like see that interaction, it takes
you
on
see
that
them
whole
walking
new.
Away, yeah.
Yep.
And I love the camera work too. Like they didn't have enough money to shoot them flying around, so they used the camera as a POV of the vampires attacking different people and flying around. The famous scene of the worms. Like there's so many iconic moments in that movie that. And it's a great cast too.
You missed something. It's got probably one of the best climaxes in one spot in that one house, like just completely locked
also,
up from anything else.
A lot of people talk about the teen hangout in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990, but the Lost Boys hang out in that like sunken hotel.
That's the Jim Morrison poster in the background, like sweet.
I always thought when I was younger when I saw this, I didn't know who the Doors was, who Jim Morrison was, and I'm like, oh, one of the vampires just has a giant picture of himself in the wall.
Right, he looks like one of the vampires.
They all styled themselves after him.
But yeah, it's a fucking fun movie, and that's kind of like my thesis of my top 10. There's one here that is not a fun movie, but the rest are just like things that I can just pop in my DVD or my Blu-ray or my VHS and just enjoy it, man. And that movie is pure joy.
Oh no, you should pick Martyrs.
Yeah, that's my number one, baby.
I'd call your wife and be like, what's wrong with your husband?
Number six.
Yes.
You know, I realized when Joe was talking earlier, I too have at least a single remake on my list coming in at number six. It's Suspiria from 2018.
I have the original.
Yeah, the original. Well, we're going to talk about 2018, baby.
I know you love that movie.
It's a great movie.
I love it so much. I love original Suspiria too, but I like the world building in the new one. I love the cast, obviously, is incredible. Not just Tilda Swinton, but Chloe Grace Moretz popping up in the beginning, and I think this is like the Dakota Johnson movie that sold me on Dakota Johnson. She was just the girl from the movies I didn't watch before, and I was like, then I saw her, and so I was like, damn.
And Mia Goth as well is very good in this one.
It's both brutal and beautiful, and this, you know what I mean? It's just a very incredibly well like made film, gorgeous film. I didn't realize that the director is the same guy who directed Call Me by Your Name.
Yeah, he has a new one, Bones and All with Timothy Chalamet, and that one looks fucking great, honestly.
I haven't seen it.
Is it the vampire movie with Timothy Chalamet?
It's a cannibal movie.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for that.
But I thought this is like the perfect example of a remake of an absolute classic that justifies its own existence by being like different enough and giving you more and like using different things that the other movie left on the table. Like the idea to use the dance school and the actual dancing as the way they like cast spells and they'll do the rituals is really cool and interesting.
Yeah, no, and, it's so good. The ending and the end reveal of the witch, of the ultimate witch, is so well made. And
oh, come on, dude!
I'm not saying what happened. I'm not saying,
don't worry, I'm never gonna see this.
And it gets to a point.
It's an Amazon original.
I remember watching it.
It's an Amazon original, but I have the Blu-ray.
I remember watching it in the theater and probably the sequence lasts like six minutes. And I remember feeling at the 3rd minute mark, I was like, damn, this thing is going way too long. And it kept going. And by then I was like, it wasn't long enough. I wanted more. I would like to see some more, please. I would, a second order, please.
It's weird. I'm not too versed in them, but like it's weird in theory to think about like a Dario Argento movie being having a remake itself and then it being good.
But I mean, he did his own sequels too, and stuff. Yeah, so he stretched it to the world too. So,
but it's just very much like fine. Him.
Yeah.
Number five.
We're into our top five, boys. That means I'm taking off some costume.
Top five.
This beanie is very small and it hurts.
Top five. Actually, this I know I said about The Descent, and I'm like, oh wow, this movie really scared me. This is another one that has stuck in my list of movies that just fucked me up. And it's the one movie that I could separate the art from the artist for. It's Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, it's a classic. I love Rosemary.
Honorable mention.
Honorable man push or honorable mentions?
I think that movie fucking sucks.
That's fair. I do have a story to tell about it, because that would relate to TJ. And that's fucking Sixth Sense. Anyway, I think the movie's terrifying. I to this day, every time I watch it, there's something really like appealing about like the story that's being told and like sucks you in, and like this like late 60s, like Manhattan, upbeat New York. But what's scary about it is it's the one movie that nails that like everyone's on the joke except for you.
Yeah, and the fear of being left out.
Yeah, like, mother drew a lot from that.
And like, I don't know who doesn't have that fear. I do, right? And it hits. It works well. It hits me. Like, yes, I know Roman Polanski's a huge fucking piece of shit. And that's why I say I could accept the like this one movie. I really could separate the art from the artist. But it just gets me. I mean, it's creepy. The rape dream sequence just kind of like nails like
this is a dream. This is really happening.
This like nails it being a dream, and then her being just confused. Like it's a very like
powerful. And Mia Farrow's so childlike too. She kind of nails that like innocent born yesterday baby trope of like she's just an ingenue out in the world, so innocent, so pure.
And then even the ending itself. Is not like a oh my god, it's like this like Hail Satan and they're all like high class and into
I love the ending because like it's the one thing you don't expect, whereas that Rosemary really is gonna she loves her baby, she can't help it. She loves her baby, and she's gonna do what mothers do. Like it's wild.
The
ending is very Wicker Man like in that sense, right?
Yeah. That's a good comparison.
But TJ, you said he hates so in high school. My uncle is watching me, right? Like, he's, like, watched, like, my parents went away for the week, and he's watching me, and I had this girl come over, and I was like, I don't know, and I wasn't thinking, I was like, I'll put this horror movie on, and I put it on, and, like, obviously this is not a movie to, like, watch to want to, like, let's hook up or anything like that.
Hey, how you like a rape scene? Do you want to make out for a rape scene?
But it's on, right? Whatever. We're watching it, and my uncle comes in, and instead of leaving, he goes, oh, you have a girl over, and doesn't say it, but he just sits down and starts watching it with us instead of leaving. And then it ends and goes, that's it? That's how that ends? And all I'm sitting there is thinking, get the fuck out of the room. I'm trying to kiss this girl.
I'm trying to Mac over here, dog.
And it was just really, I love that movie, but I always think of that fucking story because it was like, shit. It was like he knew what he was doing. He was like,
oh, absolutely. He was playing the cock block on you.
He was literally thinking, you should have just told me you had a girl over. I wouldn't have shown up.
But now that I'm here.
Anyway, I had to put it in my top five because I've always come back to that movie.
It's another one that I didn't find till later in life. I probably didn't see it till I was in my 20s, but I too really love it, and it's like the one Roman Polanski thing that I like allow in my life.
Yeah, I don't need Macbeth. I don't need Chinatown, but
Chinatown's good, but I was a one time watch was enough for me. But I'll go back to Rosemary's Baby.
All right, TJ, number five is Rosemary's Baby, so go ahead and continue talking about Rosemary's Baby.
Since we all know how much you love it, God, you won't shut up about it.
Well, Push, obviously, because it's number one for me. but for this one, I'm going to go with another classic, Nicholson. This movie that took me a while to really scare the shit out of me because I didn't know what was going on when I was younger, but when I did, this movie is, for me, the Shawshank Redemption of horror.
Witches of Eastwick. Witches of Eastwick.
No Push?
No,
what
push.
Is it? What is it?
Shining.
The Shining.
Oh, I'm at number five. Push. Number five with The Shining.
Push. Oh, I've linked in with everybody.
Oh, bullshit. No, it's Push. We're at number five. Push. Okay, but can I make a point? Can I do a little something since my number five is next anyway? I bundled The Shining with Dr. Sleep. Can I talk a little bit about Dr. Sleep? To.
That's Dr. fair. Sleep I like that.
So I'm going to talk about mine was number four, so we can talk about it real quick.
Oh, I'll just do the. Want to just do it all now? Okay, all right. What it's TJ starts
for me. Oh, wait, TJ. So we're going to go right into it right now.
Yeah. Technically, The Shining is number four, but since there's three people, like let's just talk about it now. Joe, you don't have it in your top 10?
I put it on honorable mention. It's just fair enough. Can't get there.
For this one, for me, when I was younger, I've always heard about it, always read about it, and be like, I don't think that's going to Rosemary Baby it. You know what I mean? And then I finally saw it as an adult and really sat down and watched, not even as an adult, as like an an older teenager, 17, 18, 19, and you just fall in love with everything. Because every single time I watch it, I always catch something new or something that I either forgot from before, and I'm just like, oh, shit. And it has probably some of the scariest scenery that I've seen in the couple seconds they give you, the whole little girls, the story behind it, everything. Because the best part about that is Kubrick gives you those stories about the different got people who were doing the role before Jack Torrance was. And you do it in your own brain. You make it all in your own brain, and then you see these little glimpses, and you have to build the rest in yourself.
It's brilliant. You know what I
mean? It is one of those movies that it could easily be in top three, but at this point in time, it's like picking and choosing your favorite kids. So, like, for The Shining, it's probably next to, as cliche it is, Joker, like my one of my favorite Jack Nicholson roles, because Wolf, I know.
I thought you were talking about Joaquin Phoenix Joker.
One of my favorite movies, right up there with Joaquin Phoenix Joker.
Right up there with the Joker.
Even though obviously everyone knows what happened behind the scenes and how torturous Kubrick was.
But yeah, that's another asshole that we gotta separate the artist from the art.
I didn't put Creepers on my list specifically because of fucking the pedophile, but
that one's hard to separate the artist from the art.
I can't with that one.
Because of all the scenery in it. But
because the movie is about kidnapping kids and it's like, all
right. The Shining's one of those movies though too that like generally people are like, yeah, I don't like horror movies, but I love The Shining. And that's right, not
it's like that Silence of the Lambs thing where it's got that prestige where it like it leveled up past just being a horror movie because of Kubrick. You know,
there was a moment, and she might hear it, and I was dating a girl when early 20s, right? Who've seen this movie and called herself a cinematic genius when it came to shit, right? We're watching The Shining full on, not director's cut, but just unedited DVD. It gets to the girl's twin scene. She never noticed that it does the quick flash of the body parts everywhere of them. And she was beside herself. And she's like, I didn't, they can't show that in this movie. And I'm looking, I'm like, it's rated R. And she's like, this is a PG-13. This is one of the greatest PG-13 horror movies of all time. I was like, no.
Well, if you want to be an asshole, you'd be like, PG-13, it exists when this
didn't movie exist when The Shining came out. Yeah.
I'm sitting here with her. I'm just like, that's like the most iconic scene behind him, just the one track and shot of him riding through the hallway.
Like this movie, you can easily like just talk about it, but it's arguably one of the best made horror movies in terms of like the technical aspect of Kubrick's deliberate way of filming everything that happened and how he manipulated the hotel to make it seem, despite it being so huge, so claustrophobic and so entrapping everything that encompasses their surroundings. And
well, he gives it that otherworldly feel where you kind of like, it feels, it's such a concrete place. It's a building. It feels real. But like somehow the dynamics never work out. You never can like tell where you are in any of the buildings. You're like, you're always off center. You're always out of sorts. Like,
and despite him giving you multiple scenes of Danny riding around and almost laying a map of the hotel, there's multiple scenes that the lighting doesn't make sense. Like where the light source is hitting from. And you're like, what the fuck is this? This and it's subconscious too. Like you pick it up the more you see it, you're like, oh wait, that's fucked up. That shouldn't be this way. Just what the fuck is happening?
So my thing with this movie always, every time I watch it, it's so cold. Like it's the one movie. There's a few movies that makes you feel the cold of the movie, and then the sound mixing. Like, I know that's a corny thing to say. Like the whipping of the fucking outside storms,
the wind constantly,
consistently through the movie, and like it feels like if we put it on right now, the four of us, it would feel like we'd be like, it's wintertime, I'm in a snowstorm. I mean, Misery has the same thing too, but like, yeah, that's what I always pick.
Honorable mention, Misery, but and so, so yeah, The Shining is fucking amazing. I mean, we can't. But there's something that I want to allow it to you. I want to lobby it to you, Brian.
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Sleep, what Dr. Sleep does with the Chinee, and specifically the character of Lloyd, it really fucking elevates the Shining. In that Lloyd now has such a more of a deeper and richer history thanks to Jack Nicholson becoming Lloyd in Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
So you
who was Lloyd to Jack Torrance? What was their real relationship if he's seeing Lloyd? The reason I bundled them both, I think Dr. Sleep is really one of those movies like Blade Runner 2049 that can elevate the material.
Yeah.
And it had such an incredibly difficult tightrope to walk by being an adaptation of a book and a sequel to a movie that's an adaptation of a book that's not faithful to the book, but is super popular.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I do think some of Dr. Sleep's weakest things is when it's trying too hard to tie itself to The Shining. The stuff that I like the most in Dr. Sleep is like the first two-thirds where he's going up against the True Knot and, you know, and learning about them and learning about the girl and, you know, learning more about the way The Shining works in this world and how that I think Mike Flanagan is one of our – I haven't loved every single thing he's done, but I think he is one of the, like – best horror directors working right now.
I think he's way too stuck in King's World to. I've lost a little bit of my love for him, but I do.
Felt like it should have just been a Salem's Lot. Like if you're just gonna do it, just do it. Like just make Salem's Lot.
Shout out to the main bad guy. Oh fuck, I'm blanking on.
Rose the Hat. Yeah, Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, no, but the actress. She fucking kills Rose the Hat.
One of my favorite, right along with David in the new Alien movies, as one of my top like villains of the 21st century of like movie villains who've just like stuck and been really incredible.
And not even that. It's like there is part of her where like you could the worst or the best and worst part about these villains, like you can kind of find yourself almost following.
She's charismatic. She's beautiful. You know.
And shout out to the kid from The Room for just showing up for one scene just to get
that's the most brutal on-screen death of a child in any movie ever. Like if you watch the director's cut too, it's even longer. It's just gruesome.
Oh, gonna do that now.
That's Mike Flanagan, right?
Yeah.
He knocks out of the fucking park.
The small scenes in Dr. Sleep were incorporating both, like when he meets a girl, robs the girl, and then like leaves her, and then he sees the younger girl later, and you're like, oh shit, she died, the kid, you know, and it just fucks you up, but you know, it's what Kubrick did in the beginning, like you know what's happening, you kind of already have the seeds planted in your brain, it's where your brain takes you, and then it tells you like, fuck. Wish anyone knew that, but it's good. Great heart.
All right, so I'm circling back to my five because The Shining was my four. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978.
Oh, but it is a fear.
Is that one count as a remake?
Yes, it is a remake.
But there's another one called like Invasion from Mars, which is almost.
No, there is an Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the 50s.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the main dude has a cameo.
Mm-hmm. He's walking. The belief is that he's always walking from the first movie.
But yeah, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, man. That's one of those movies that really did live up to the hype. Like TJ was saying about The Shining. I kept seeing it in multiple lists. Like, oh, this is one of the best movies ever made, blah, blah. And it is so goddamn entertaining. It's one of the few movies of that era outside of like, because it's hard to say that Rosemary's Baby is like super rewatchable because it's
not.
Like horror movies back then are super slow burns, but this movie is so much fucking fun with the young Jeff Goldblum. Donna Sutherland is so good in this movie, and the practical effects.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
The practical effects are so well made. They're like it really are like has great body horror, and it is one of those movies that. It's not complex at all, but it doesn't spoon feed you everything that is happening, like the formation of the paws, how they take over the bodies and stuff like that.
It reveals itself very naturally. Yeah,
it's context and it's a slow burn. Nobody's like sitting down and it's like, oh, they came from this planet and they're doing this because they need the resources of the, like, it's just like it's happening. And it's all, and it also has one of the most iconic endings ever filmed. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it has that great, yeah, that great ending.
Sweaty. You can watch that on Fear as well. Lon Harris picked it.
Fear take episode, a shot.
And
I'm out.
It was my first time watching that, and I also just like fell in love with it with myself, Yusuf. Like, it's concerning. And Lon, I remember brought up a great point, because it was like, oh shit, when we did, I think it was like COVID was still a big thing. So we related to like the anti-vaxxers, and he was like, they could reverse it. Like, the movie watches it, and no matter what you,
yep,
political, whatever what you politically think, like
50 cents,
yeah, you think you can inject that in there.
You think you're in the right. You think mm-hmm. you're Donald Sutherland.
And it's also one of those movies as well, like Wicker Man and Rosemary's Baby. Like, everybody's in on it, and you can feel him going crazy, trying to gather people. Like, hey, shit is going down.
Yeah,
pay fucking listen, this to is me. Happening.
Yeah,
and I mean that ending, it like. If you don't know, it's going to be iconic now, so then you're like, that scene never happens, like, when I watch it. But, like, it's kind of like this ending of, like, you think this is, you're following the woman who, it was, like, the second lead the whole time, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, great, we're just going to get this kind of, like, punch and follow-up, and then
they're going,
like,
to team up, and then they're going to go off, and they're going to fight it, and you find out that, yeah.
She gets the reveal of, like, nope, he's, my man is turned.
Yeah, it's a good movie, and it's very rewatchable. It's just
good
fun.
Young Jeff Goldblum, too.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum, like, he's always been Jeff Goldblum. It's fucking wild to see that he's always been Jurassic this. Park? He's, what?
He's not Jurassic in Jurassic Park? He's so good in Jurassic Park.
No, he's not.
He is so good in Jurassic Park.
That number four, Joe! Let's
wow. kill it. All right, top four is, I had to do it, Halloween.
Bush.
We knew it was going to get here.
Bush.
It's an honorable mention.
So TJ now.
For my number four, I'm surprised we haven't done any of these yet. Maybe we have. I think maybe the 10 or 9s. But 1978, Dawn of the Dead. As much as we love remakes.
It's an honorable mention.
That's a great, yeah, it's an honorable mention.
On Zack Snyder, one of the greatest remakes, but 78's Dawn of the Dead is the first Romero zombie movie I ever saw.
It's fucking great.
It's the first zombie movie I ever saw, and it is, to me, the most iconic and one of the ones that, if there was zombie apocalypse now, why wouldn't you just go to a mall? It's like your first instinct, and one of the greatest video games for Dreamcast, the first Xbox.
Dead Rising.
Original Xbox, yeah.
The original Xbox, Dead Rising, is just kind of inspired by that. But the original Dawn of the Dead, 78, some people argue, I think 76 too. Who the fuck knows? It's free on YouTube. Go watch
There's
it.
There's like three. I have the rare, like, I bought it from like online, yeah, region,
dude,
free.
And say that, because that's going to just keep jumping up in price.
There's like, there. There's like, three versions on the disc I own, and I never know which one to watch. It's
there,
like,
was an Arrow release too that like came and went real quick of Dawn of the Dead. Like,
I have a 4K of it, and it's beautiful, but it's just I can't watch any of the special features though,
because they're all in German.
Yeah. But I can watch the movies.
It's just like your typical zombie movie is as a much of a knock as that sounds, but like, you get a lot of the elements of them in the mall where they're just kind of having a good time, which, you know, one of my favorite scenes when they're collecting supplies, they have to go to one side and bang on the glass, have all the zombies gather that way, run to the other side, and then when Tom Savini again, shows up with the Piker gang, and it's probably one of the most gruesome / like used practical effects for zombie, like eating, like when the guy's doing the arm wrestling game in the arcade, and the zombies come and rip them just completely apart. And even though it all looks like they're just eating like chicken gizzards, it is. And then the whole scene in the beginning where they're escaping the helicopter, where they have like segregated parts of the hotel, or not the hotel, the apartment, where people are living amongst the zombies, because that's what they can. It's like one of those things where it's kind of like a continuation of Night of the Living Dead, but also has.
it does a weird thing, like, filmmaking wise too. It follows Romero's style of like telling stories more as like documentary style.
Yeah.
And not just like a linear storytelling, like compared to the remake, which is really
good. I had not seen 78 until a couple, like a year or two ago. I just never had been able to get my hands on it and watched it. Yeah. And I was kind of surprised at how just kind of like day in the life it feels. Like, yes. It's kind of a little more like, you know, the Zack Snyder version's got, it has like a montage that feels like that, but the rest of the movie feels very much just like an action movie from the early 2000s, yeah. You know, four elements.
Just the changing.
But like, it's like that montage in the middle of Zack's is what the whole movie is of in 78. And like, you really get to see them kind of like experience the kind of, the kind of like excitement slash, you know, like newness of it, and then like into the boredom of it after you've kind of experienced everything there is to experience there. And like, I don't know, it's
how many
good.
Times are you gonna go into the gun shop, which again is crazy to me. There was a gun shop in the mall,
gun shop
sporting
in the mall.
Good store, but still.
So I have a question about it. Do you think this movie owns the greatest head pop of all time?
No, it's Scanners.
It's for me. It's always Scanners.
It's always gonna be Scanners.
But it has the greatest reveal of that beforehand. Because I think
Savini thinks he made the best one with this.
Yeah, this one's more emotional than anything because you get the scene where like he's pulling it down and you're like, all right, it's over. You're waiting fucking 40 minutes for him after he got bent his ankle. Turn happens and. You know, so
I do like the guy with the Frankenstein one that gets his head, the top of his head taken off by the helicopter.
I was going to say, helicopter one's my favorite.
I prefer that than the head explosion.
I think it's like also the first use of a kid zombie that he just fucking takes out with a baseball
bat.
Oh,
no, it's not because Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah.
The girl in the basement.
Gotcha, yeah. But she uses a knife, which always drove me nuts, right? She used that fucking weird thing.
Like a trowel, yeah. She used a trowel.
Well, they didn't define it at that point.
I mean, literally, George Romero was, he was laying the groundwork.
He's the guy.
So, great pick, TJ. Ryan, what's your four?
Number four. This is one that did not make my DVD bunker list because it was too new at the time and I wasn't sure about it. But it's gone on to maintain in my eyes, and like I thought it was an instant classic. I still think it is. The Witch, 2015.
Honorable mention for me.
Honorable mention.
Robert
Eggers.
Sat
on my list.
I mean, like love a director who like bursts onto the scene with his directorial debut, right? Like, I mean, a guy who really makes his mark immediately. Love that. Obviously, star-making performance for Anya Taylor-Joy. Rafe Innes, who I only knew as Finchy from the British Office, if anybody's a fan of the UK Office. He's basically the David Koechner of that show. But he's so good as the dad in that. And I really think the attention to detail and the realism makes it so much scarier. It really feels like it's a place that exists. And it really feels like so real because it feels so true to the period and everything. I really just I love all that.
He went on to play the Green Knight in the Green.
Yeah, he's actually the voice of the Green Knight. Yeah.
I had that on my list.
In a whole era of prestige horror too. I mean, without The Witch, you probably don't have the rise of A24. Like,
no. And I like that you picked that too, because like speaking of horror and like there is a lane for this like this prestige horror has now become a joke for some people, but they're good movies. There's a fucking lane and they're scary and I know a lot of horror people right now are pumping their chest because Terrifier 2 is doing real well, which is a really cool story in itself, but those movies are fucking ass.
Right.
They're using that to be like, this is the anti A24 type horror movies, where it's like, no, fans made that annoying. The movies themselves are all good or bad.
Right, the movies themselves are legitimately good. Like, you're more annoyed with the like uppity, like nose in the air fans.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I can like horror because it's classy, you know.
And
I think the one thing that, you know, shifting the conversation back to The Witch, but the one thing that movie does very well is like, it is a slow burn and not a lot of things happen in the middle. Like, most of the action is towards the end. But the one thing that it does very well and very intelligent is, like, that gruesome opening scene of the witch taking the baby.
The baby.
Yeah.
That sets up a world where if a baby is not safe and you're going to show me this fucking brutal kill, I don't know what the fuck is going to happen in this movie for the rest. Like, after that, you're in your heels, which is like, what the fuck is going to happen next? So you ride the wave of the slow build with that in the back of your head. So it really, like, earns that slow build after that, after they show you that gruesome opening sequence.
The crow pecking at her fucking tit.
Yeah, so like, horrifying. You think she's like feeding, maybe she's like feeding a crow, just pecking her nip off.
Oh, and I always like laugh slash enjoy the goat just fucking the dad up.
The dad. Oh yeah, hell yeah.
I think it has also one of the best like final shots of the witches rising. It's beautiful.
Beautiful. My number four has already been mentioned, which was The Shining.
So I just change the rotation and start number three, start us on round three, since we're caught up now?
No. Three. No. Joe.
Three.
I appreciate it, though.
I had to do it. I keep saying I adore this movie, but it's the top ten. And
you adore all these movies. These are literally the best.
It's and I kept coming back to this, and I know in recent like people have told me why it's not like shouldn't be here, and it should. It's Candyman.
Honorable mention, the
original and 2021 on my
2021 is also great. I'm talking about the original, just Tony Todd. And it might not for everyone, but it's super rewatchable to me.
Oh yeah, I do. I love rewatching it.
It's haunting,
and much like when I talked about Interview with a Vampire, horny.
Yeah, it's horny. It's a movie I watch right. I simultaneously thinking like, why didn't Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd like work more?
Yeah.
Like, they're both separately so good and watchable. Like, in 2021, when I hear her audio, even on the voiceover, like you hear Helen on like a recorder, I get excited because I'm like, that's a really fun way
to horny.
I get horny. She looks great in that movie.
And Tony, like, his voice has to be like top five best voices ever. Yeah. Ever. Like, just ever recorded.
Shout out Tony Todd. Follow me on Twitter. Thank you so much, buddy.
But I think Candyman.
Thank you for watching, Tony.
And what I find crazy about Candyman.
An hour and 40 minutes in, I bet you're still watching.
the real urban legend of it with the real like Bloody Mary thing of it. That terrifies me to this day. Where like I
love the way they extrapolated that in the new one too, of like the different stories of trauma that all kind of like every generation gets their own Candyman cool.
And Candyman itself, like, it's just it's good. And then I oddly enough, it hasn't been mentioned a lot during our conversation. The score, this like beautiful operatic score, brings you into this world. And I've never been to Chicago, but to myself I'm like, oh man.
And I was gonna say the setting too, like the urban setting for it is something that we had not seen in horror at the time, like setting it in the projects, setting it, you know, with a like green, obviously green. A white seed, but like a lot of like, there's definitely just a lot of like black vibe to the movie, you know.
And that's what it's, I mean, like,
directed by the whitest white Englishman there ever
was.
I
But she saves that baby, Brian. She saves the baby.
I've been told by like people of color of like why the movie shouldn't work and things like that. And I just, at the end of the day, I'm like, it works for me, and I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, that's the thing, that's like they're, unfortunately, it's representing something different for them, and you can't, you know, that's their prerogative to dislike for whatever.
Yeah, that's I'm not saying that in a bad way.
I like the way they have the white in the new one, the white gallery owner named Clive, who like is trying to profit off the art of the black community, and he's like the first one to get it. I was like, okay, I see you, movie.
My favorite tidbit about that movie has to be, though, speaking of Clive Barker, so it's a Clive Barker story, which is supposed to be in London, and it's a different, you know, they just put it in, is the movie ends still with that bonfire, right? Like a Wicker Man type thing. And it works in the movie. That's not a thing in Cabrini Green, right? It's the middle of winter. No one burns a thing. It is a thing in London, where the ghettos of London, where it was supposed to be. And they just kept it because it is visually cinematic.
Good climax. Yeah, good climax.
And when you know that it is funny as shit, you're like, yeah, it's like 10 degrees outside, and like they're just burning shit out.
That's
and,
why
like,
they need that big fire.
Anyway, I
heating for the entire complex.
I was really excited to put for this top three that we have coming up.
Oh yeah.
DJ, number three.
Well, I pushed Joe, and I'm going to be the basic bitch and just put it as my number three. We can gloss over it because we will be talking about it in an upcoming episode for our favorite Halloween films or Halloween film draft. But Halloween. It is.
Definitely on my bunker list for sure.
Yeah.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, so it's just DJ and I.
So, like, you, it's. Again, one of those most cliche picks ever.
Yeah.
Does it have its flaws? Absolutely. Now, is it like basically beaten to death? Absolutely. But this movie is fucking horror movie.
It works. It just works. It works.
It's one perfect standalone piece of art, though. You cannot take it.
I know, Brian, you've disagreed with me recently. I'm right with you, TJ. I call it one of the few, even though it was sitting at like four on my list. I call it one of the few perfect movies. Like it's not
a knock to it, but it's like it's the development of having a first time director, low budget. You got to make some of these things work and make more. It's a Steven Spielberg almost thing with Jaws. Like it didn't have a lot, and what it was able to put out on the screen for what it was and what it was written as, you wouldn't. There's no way it would ever happen again. It's just one of those things that's just very, very, very simple and great. Because that's all it is. A very simple story, simple characters.
Very well executed.
Horror movie.
There's no Oscar-winning performances. And, like, again, I made this argument last night on Twitter. It's like, there's nothing about the film where you can pick one person out. Sure, Jamie Lee Curtis is great. She's a great final girl. But, like, it's the most novice acting you will ever see on all the characters, but again, everything just hits everyone.
Except for Donald Pleasance, obviously.
Oh.
Sure.
No, you're right, except for Donald Pleasance. But it's a movie where, like, as you said, like, everything serves its purpose in it, and Michael Myers himself just...
And the score.
Score. The score does all the work. The movie doesn't work without the score. Mm-hmm. But Michael Myers himself serves that purpose, and like, yeah, he's technically in it limited, but when he shows up, you notice, you pay attention, and like, it's the little things, right? The scariest moments are the little things of him just watching.
I'll tell you what, too. Like, you could put any little kid in any scary costume ever. You throw a little kid in a full on Michael Myers get up, and that little kid does this one fucking move. The head tilt, I'm out. It's one of the greatest, scariest, dumbest things ever. But like Michael Myers, because of that, just the character itself, he ever does this, you're like, oh, hey, I think I'm getting to him. And he goes back to just being the shape. And just
like, it's interesting to think, like, Brian De Palma easily could have made this movie because it's a fucking voyeur. Like, it's all about voyeurism. And like, it works more, like Yusuf said, like that score.
Oh, yeah.
That score just runs that shit through.
I can only imagine how many times they did a one shot and they were like, yeah, this should work. It's probably good enough. You know what I mean? And then went back to editing and were like, okay, how the fuck can we make this work? And Todd Carpenter's like, when you're like, oh, God, fuck it. There you go.
So I'm guessing that Brian's number three is the other one that was pushed, right?
Nope.
No. Oh.
My number three is Night of the Living Dead from 1968.
Oh, nice. Shit.
Honorable mention.
For you, Bob.
I had to kind of wheel myself in. I started
talking about it when we were talking about Dawn of the Dead, and I started to, like, I had to like reel myself in when I started. But one of the first movies that I was kind of skeptical about that I was like, wow, this holds the fuck up. Like the first time I saw it, I was like, holy crap, this is incredible. It's still shocking. It's still surprising. It's got some of my favorite, the attempt at the plan with the truck and the way that goes wrong is one of my favorite bits in a horror movie ever. Like, because like we've seen people with a plan, but we've never seen it. You know, it was just like the way it fell apart so perfectly, and like it felt very real, like a thing that could really happen if you were stressed out and scared and trying to move quickly, but like not being careful, and like and we already talked about the little girl, the reveal of the little girl at the end is such an incredible moment.
And the ending is also like, I feel like we've mentioned,
so sad.
Yeah, we've mentioned multiple endings here, but I think that has to be like there.
I mean,
like,
often duplicated but never matched. No. The ending is just incredible. And man, shout out to Dwayne Jones. Like, George Romero's been on the record many times as being like, I just picked the best actor available to me. But you cannot deny the social commentary going on of a movie made in 1968 where the lone survivor is a black man who immediately gets murdered by the cops.
I think everybody passed, like...
And not only that, he's the one, like, taking charge of the situation and, like, slapping people around.
I think MLK was murdered, like, 2 weeks prior to that or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Something like there's a weird connection to that too, so it's like even more poignant to what they're doing.
But I mean, like literally, he's paving the way. He's creating the modern zombie to the point where they don't even call them zombies yet; they're calling them ghouls. And he also hits that thing perfectly, which I think your best zombie movies always do, which is that the people that are left behind are the actual threat. Like. And I guess maybe in the when they moved to fast moving zombies, that became less of a thing because it was more about like the action vibe of it.
You're 28 like, days later.
When you have slow moving zombies, you realize that it's not them you have to worry about; it's the society around you that is crumbling.
We were the monsters all along.
Of the people that are left, or whatever, you know.
Well. Takes the point of that too, because they do the whole thing where they're flying through the helicopter and just like looking down at everything, and there's just like people have zombies hung up on trees, they're using them as like bait for shit, and like kids are fucking with them. It's like that whole weird thing where you're just like, fuck, he way ahead of his time, but also right at the moment
he's very very accurate with his social commentary, unfortunately. My number three is Suspiria. The original Suspiria, I fucking love that movie. It's so gorgeous, and it's very rare to call a horror movie gorgeous, like the vibrant colors, the funky techno symphony.
Oh, the Goblin soundtrack is like half the movie. Like, we talked about soundtracks when we were talking about Halloween and Candyman, but like, you cannot deny the Goblin when she's the first scene where she's walking. And you have the kind of droning, like, but then when you hear every time they cut to the doors, you got that tinkling kind of, you know, that it's so good.
What's
the otherworldly kind of vibe of it?
Yeah, exactly. And it creates this world where, like, obviously she's like, exactly, like she's in this fucking ballerina school and things are happening around her, like this kind of a quasi-slasher movie, psychological thriller, witchcraft. Everything's happening around her, and the reveal of everything that's like slowly unfolding. And her acting, she's a very good actress. She's like I know we mentioned like Jamie Lee Curtis is not great in Halloween. This final girl like sells the mania pretty well, and I just fucking love the cinematography. Argento's camera movement, it, like this movie, every time I watch it, I go like, fuck, I love it. Like, it's just, it's hard for me to not include it in when I'm mentioning horror movies, despite it being like, you know, not as loved and not as,
I think it's very low.
As rewatched. Like, I feel like if I say, oh, yes, in my top three, somebody would go, like, really?
What's up with the, I just want to know, what's up with the room they have just of, like, barbed wire?
It's a trap.
It's a trap. You think you're escaping and you fall into that.
You're escaping, you fall into the barbed wire.
It's where Jigsaw learned it.
I feel like it's like they're probably like filming Jackass stumble into that set.
It's the Silence of the Lambs bit in the newest Jackass, the fucking all.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's like, you think you escaped it?
Four movies in, and that's maybe one of my all-time favorites.
It's one of the best bits, but it's just like, I'm not going in there. Dude, the lights went off. That's not good. There's a door. That's not good. That's Suspiria.
And also, I also love the hands. The killer's hands.
Like hairy hands, like monster. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. All right, number two, Joe.
Exorcist 3.
What?
Yeah.
What a curb. I thought I had a curveball with my number three, but that's a curveball right there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. I
feel like I've heard you and like Sam talk about this over
Legion.
And over.
I like Legion.
Exorcist 3 is like, so like, and this is favorites, right? This is where we say favorites. Like, I am one of the cliche people where I will say the original Exorcist, generally, I have a hard time watching. It hits me. It scares me. It's not. It's a scarier movie. I just want to say that before I like want to. But from like the stance of like, this is my movie, Exorcist 3. I sit with it. Like, I know like. This is the more direct follow-up in the sense of, like, we're following one of the priests and of the original. We're following Father Karras from the original, and you get this great, I mean, this fucking great H.G. Scott performance in this movie. And it's weird, like, there's these odd scenes, right? The heaven shit with, like Fabio and Charles Barkley.
Sam Jackson?
Like, which is fun, like, and again, his voice is dubbed over because he's not Sam Jackson yet, but, like, that's besides the point in this, like, and you get an amazing Stephen Dorff, like... Brad Dorff.
Shut out the gate.
As the Zodiac Killer, not the real Zodiac Killer, but he's in there, and there's just...
Gemini.
He's kind of like the Zodiac.
And then, I mean, I can't dismiss the quintessential jump scare of all time, where like the camera just sits for 5 minutes on a shot of a nurse doing nothing,
just working,
and then it comes at the most inopportune time. But for me, why it sits at three and so scary is because there is these really like unnerving parts to it of like,
yeah, the third
those
act
shears in that get stabbed at the end, and then like, the old lady who goes to the to go give confession, and then like you hear the demon voice talk back to it, and like the winds whipping and like the things going off, and it's a movie where like. That you know you have that original Exorcist, and that movie's terrifying because you see everything. Exorcist 3 shows you nothing, and it does these weird everything.
It's got that police procedural element where he's showing up at the end, like after the crimes have happened, and like doing an investigation and kind of like doing forensics.
Isn't this the movie that Dahmer made everyone watch?
Yeah, so Jeffrey Dahmer. That's like the Jeffrey Dahmer was obsessed with this movie. And that's not why I picked that. I haven't watched the show. I don't have any. But, and that actually, like, gave the movie even, like, more, like, this bad stigma to it. Like, because it's one of those sequels to me.
Well, The Heretic didn't help. Like, yeah, everybody was already ready to, like, cast off any sequel to The Exorcist.
Yeah, so this is a movie where everyone...
Go watch our second horror hold-down. I was dressed as Frida Kahlo, and we talked about all of it here.
And this is a movie where, like, Blatty, who did write the original one, actually didn't want to put The Exorcist's name to it either.
He's like, no, he just wanted to call it Legion, right?
Yeah, he was like, it has nothing to do with that. Like, I just, and they made that. That's why there's two cuts. There's a director's cut and a theatrical release, and they both serve their own benefits. The that's why there's kind of this forced exorcism at the end of the movie. But I love that movie, and I'm happy to have that too. That was my, like, I'm so happy that was, like, put that as a curveball for you guys, because I think it's a fucking excellent movie that in a weird way is scarier than most movies, but, like, it's smarter, and I think George C. Scott, especially, or George C. Scott, something like The Changeling, like, is a really...
Scott C. Howe.
Is a really fun fucking actor to watch, because he just plays shit so straight, and, like...
Well, he's got that serious actor gravitas, yeah. Like, I'm a dramatic guy, like...
Anyway, it's, for me, it's I'll stop rambling in a sec, but, like, it popped up in the 101 Greatest Horror Movie Moments in the top 20, and, I was really happy to fucking see that pop up there, because I was like, this, you know, you could have shoved that at 98 for some people.
Nice. Shove me your two, TJ.
For me, two is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. Till this day, still scares the shit out of me. And for Movie Fighting Joe, you already said it. The Exorcist.
Yeah.
It is terrifying for the simple fact of, obviously, it's one of the first iconic horror movies to come out that wasn't a slasher or anything like that. But the thought of a kid, like, I hate being a kid watching these movies, and kids are like the main focus of it, or the main victims and all that type of shit, because I was a kid, it happened to me. The whole Reagan getting possessed by the devil, the practical effects, the voice.
It was terrifying.
This movie is fucking terrifying, which makes it one of my favorites, because I still, to this day, being 35, I still might go like this. Like,
that's why I didn't. That's why I didn't put it on my top. Just for the, like, like, I put it on as favorites over scary. You know what I'm saying?
Sure,
it's funny, when I did my bunker list, I left Exorcist off as an honorable mention, knowing that Matt, my co-host at the time, would have it in his, like, top three, and I was like, I don't need to put it on there. We're gonna talk about it, and I kind of felt the same way this time around. I was like, somebody's gonna get to the Exorcist. I'll be fine if I leave it off.
No, TJ, I love that you have that. Like, you and me, our lists are similar, because you put Exorcist, like, and. It's just scary, and I found out recently that, like, the movie itself has been George Lucas'd.
Oh, really? They have, added, like, CGI shit?
Well, apparently, the first, like, even the first week of theaters, like, the original run, never looked like what they put out on video. Or, like, like, later, like, there were things, like, cut, like, and added, even, like, weeks after it was released.
Shit.
Or, like, taken out. And then, like, the version I own, because I do own the movie, the only one I was able to get was the one they re-released in, like, 2000. That does have added, like, things into it. The
directors. It's a classic for a reason. Like, it's very well made. Amazing practical effects. Linda Blair kills it.
I feel bad for her. She's one of those Hollywood stories.
One of the movie lines that I use in my regular life all the time that, like, is, you wouldn't think of, why you do this to me, Demi?
Yeah.
Anytime somebody wrongs
that
me,
why you do this to me, Demi? His mom. Shit.
And of course, the classic score. I know, like, this top five score heavy. And the cinematography too, man. It's a reason why that poster is so fucking well known, is because the way that scene was shot, you were like, oh, that's fucking great. Like, the darkness and the light just hitting the priest as he walks in. Well, it's a great movie. Honorable mention on my end.
It's a creepy fucking movie. I mean,
yeah. So, Joe, I think now, Joe, you get to talk about Child's Play.
Well, Brian goes.
I know, but I'm saying...
It's number two. Yeah, number two. Yeah, Child's Play 2. I mean,
everybody gets to talk about Child's Play.
We don't have to spend too much time on it. I did a whole rant about it last year. We talked about the Child's Play movies at length. I just, real quick, the tightness of it, like, there's no wasted, there's no fat on Child's Play 2. And
tight,
also
like
the finale.
Booty.
Tight. the finale in the factory all timer. That's really all I want to say about it. If you want to hear more, there's a whole episode right
there. Yeah, it's an hour and 20 minutes.
I'll add Brian's. Hour and 20 minutes
of Shout's Play. He's just talking about my part.
Hour and 20 minutes of Shout's Play talk.
Since I added it on my list, it's everything you said, plus it's the rare sequel that truly like gives us the up of the ante. And the payoff's good, and it
doesn't add more dolls.
It doesn't. Yeah, it just fits the same shit as the first one. Because Child's Play 1 easily could have made the list as well.
Yeah.
I'll just add it there. We can move on.
The first three are like just straight fastballs to me.
Yeah. Yusuf, what's your two?
So I thought I was looking at my list, and I was like, "Oh wow, I'm a bitch for '70s and '80s horrors, with the exception of Frighteners." And I was like, oh, "Okay, Cabin in the Woods at least is in there." But I was like, "You know what? I need a good zombie movie because that's one of the categories that I wasn't in." We've mentioned it multiple times. It's one of it's just so fucking good. Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later.
Oh, God, so good! I just bought it on Blu-ray.
Like the existential crisis of waking up in London, just fucking bare bones. The dick zombies out. Are dick out, yeah. Good dick though. Good. Zombies, just like they leveled up the zombies, they leveled up the humans around them. The sheer terror of like trying to survive in a world that really doesn't want you to survive.
I'll tell you the moment that always got me in that one, and like. It's something that I still think hits hard. It hits harder than most zombie movies ever go. Is when he goes to find his parents and they've killed themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they didn't want to wait around to maybe survive or like fight zombies their whole life. They're like, I'm sorry, and they leave him the note, please never wake up. I mean, that's just brutal, right? Like
his mom's not wearing any pants.
It's one of the quietest moments, but. It's still somehow one of the most powerful when I always think about that and when the one drop of blood drips in Brendan Gleeson's eye.
Oh, well, that and
fucks you up, yeah. Or,
because he's your daddy in that movie.
He's
your cuddly daddy.
I love the buildup of when he finally does get found by, Naomi something and the other guy. And then you get this nice, cool camaraderie between those two folks, and like, oh, they must have been going through this forever together. And then
no, they just met each other.
Get the arm. And he's like, no. And she doesn't hesitate for a second. She just hacks my man fucking pieces. I'm like, yep. Oh, maybe they weren't
right
that tight.
Then and there. You know what I mean?
That movie
and the sequel is not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
It's fine.
Yeah, but that movie I think is like close to perfect. As you can get, especially in that genre,
Between like literally 28 Days Later, the Dawn of the Dead remake, and Shaun of the Dead, such a strong trilogy that came out like within a year of each other that they literally sustained zombies as a genre since. We have not gotten out of the zombie era. Since.
But even 28 Days Later,
my middle school, my developmental middle school. It shaped my like.
You cut out for me, so I was like.
Me and my best friend Chris used to literally just go to the movies and like buy a ticket to where I'm showing with no like intention, and all three of those movies were things going, and it was the time where, when you were like 12 or 13, they were not checked. They were like, sure, whatever, rated like.
My movie theater, nobody was checking those doors. So you could buy a family ticket to watch, you know, a Pixar movie. Nobody was checking the doors.
We saw We saw Dawn of the Dead and we loved it. We saw Shaun of the Dead, we loved it. And then we saw, you know, whatever the thing is, 28 Days Later, and we loved it. And but we would literally go see so many movies like that where we would show up. Me and Chris literally went to go see Something's Gotta Give, the old people movie. And we're like, that was phenomenal. Like, that's how frequently we were there.
Something that would be a good one. But yeah, I saw 28 Days Later as a 13-year-old. And it's one of the few movies that I remember legitimately gripping my seat during a lot of the sequence. Like, it's truly terrifying and a very well-made movie. Number one. Joe, what's your number one?
Number one, I went with the classic. I'm sure you all fucking see it coming. and I couldn't help but put it.
No, dude, one. You went with Exorcist 3. I cannot see what's coming.
I'm stuck.
Nightmare on Elm Street. It's my favorite of all time.
Honorable mention.
There's no way around it. I there were other Nightmare movies that I was like with only wanting to choose one that I wanted to add, right? Like New Legit Nightmare.
Scary.
Like New Nightmare I enjoy a little more, to be quite honest. And like
New Nightmare made my bunker list.
But Nightmare on Elm Street, I could throw it on after we watched it today. I love that fucking movie. I love the introduction of Freddy Krueger. I love Nancy as this final girl. I love the story element to it. And above all else, I love the kills and practical effects to it. And yes, there's some truly terrifying shit. Like her friend in the fucking bloody, the bag following her through the school. Mm-hmm. And the random goats and the children. Like, it's just a good movie that I couldn't. Like everything else on these lists, right? They're scarier shit. I couldn't help but put it number one because it is my favorite.
Yeah, it's absolutely legit.
The original, because it's not as slapstick, he still has.
Oh, it's not, and it. Yes, it's,
he's much scarier in the first one.
It's probably one of the most terrifying movies.
Although not scarier than New Nightmare though.
But he's not slapsticks, but you still see Freddy, which is why it's there. Like, and I just think I would have put New Nightmare. I could easily swap New Nightmare and this movie. They're kind of on equal planes. But I'm sticking with that, and that is why I had number one.
The thing that I always talk about too when you talk about New Nightmare, it's like, yes, New Nightmare is almost as good, but it doesn't exist without Nightmare on Elm Street, which I believe you have to almost give a bump to Nightmare on Elm Street for, like, without it, you wouldn't get New Nightmare. You couldn't, especially the way how meta it is, it definitely couldn't exist.
And that's where this sits. And, the movie has its warts. I mean, I think we've at this point all seen their behind the scenes stuff and like this and like the Bob Shea interference. And like,
yeah,
there's things we could take out of it, and that's fine. But
it's a good, fun movie.
I'll take it and I'll watch it any day of the fucking week. I'll maybe put it on after we get off this call and fall asleep to it tonight. Oddly enough.
All right. TJ, hurry up because he's got to watch Nightmare on Elm Street.
I mean, we're not going to spend a lot of time on mine. We kind of already know where this one's going.
I don't know. Why do people
assume that? I don't know where actually anyone's going.
I mean, because I was going to chime that. And just be like, I'm not one. It's Child's Play, guys. It is my favorite horror movie slasher. It arguably the acting in this compared to like any horror film of these like your iconic slashers. I don't know why it's generic, but like Freddy, Michael, Jason, Pinhead. Sure, I mean, I guess I don't really incorporate him in a lot of those things. But he has two fucking films. Hellraiser sucks. That's for a different show.
Fucking a fight.
But Child's Play for me, again, Child's Play 2 is incredible, but Child's Play 1 is where it all started. You wouldn't have Child's Play 2 without Child's Play 1. And also, Child's Play 1 is kind of where it falls in the edge with Freddy. Like, Chucky's always going to be comedic. He's always going to be a great Brad Dourif character. But the first one, you didn't know where you were getting yet. And then the second one, third one, fourth one, fifth one. And then you guys have obviously the Chucky series now. But like,
so good.
No, please tell me more about them.
This is legit scary fucking slasher. Even more so than it being a guy catching your dreams that gets you and walks real fucking slow, but as powerful as anything. This guy tricks you into being your best friend, and as a kid, you're like, what would I want more than having me tea? Let me get a doll
that talks. So sympathetic.
It is so scary. The performances are incredible, and Brad Dourif is my favorite horror icon of all time.
The role of Chucky underneath that fucking couch.
Oh, the entire scene with the mom, with her, like, because that's too, the one thing with the Chucky is, like, in Child's Play 2.
You fucking three, bitch!
Yeah, like, people don't notice it. It's only, like, certain people, and if they do notice.
Talk to me, damn it.
The best part about Chucky 1, which even fucks you up more when you get into Chucky 2 and 3, is, like, you had two detectives see it and experience it, and still the fucking mom got taken away from the kid, and still the kid got put in the fucking homes, and like,
I don't know what happened with the detectives. I forget if they ever really chime into that, if they ever talk about them again. But
they mentioned something, too, about how they clammed up because they didn't want to keep their jobs or whatever.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things where it's like, these people saw this kid leave everything he was saying, but still didn't get him out of the trouble.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. Motherfucker was in homes.
Also, original Fright Night.
Yes. Tom Holland directed.
Right. Fuck. Yep.
Yes, the kid, that's right. You heard it here first. The kid who plays Spider-Man directed both of those movies.
Wow. You mean Uncharted?
Yes.
Child's Play, I cannot argue. Nightmare, I cannot argue. Brian.
Okay, so you probably have noticed on everybody's list, a lot of times, like, your favorite movies, it depends on how when they hit you in your life and how many times you've watched them, how long they've been a part of you. But my number one is a recent pick, and if you're fans and you've been following, probably not going to be surprised. It's The Fucking Ritual, man.
Yeah, you love that.
Oh, shit, yeah. Hell yeah.
Just, I mean, as we talked about The Descent and we talked about From Dusk Till Dawn.
It's honorable mention.
It's got that thing of, like, it's got personal drama between the characters. It's got a situation that's already bad long before any creep or monster or you know, it's a situation already going wrong where you got a person hurt and you're lost in the woods and you're trying to take a shortcut that doesn't work out. And then once it hits that scene in the cabin and they wake up the next morning, they've all had these horrific nightmares and the dude is like naked. Sleeping up by the weird statue. And all that is then amplified once you get in to see the actual creature that's been causing this.
And it's such a great creature design.
The creature design is incredible. The creature itself is terrifying, but then the abilities of the creature are also terrifying. It's not just physically scary. It manipulates your mind. It, like, works on you. It has, like, it casts a spell on you, and it makes you see things that aren't there. It controls your mind. It's just, it's a very, very... very good movie, and that's love great. Rafe Spall. I love that Rafe Spall has become, like, a big star now. Good for him.
And that movie also, to find out that, like what you're going into is, like, something just everyone's just trying to protect themselves ritualistically to save themselves against a creature, and none of the shit fucking ends up actually working.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also
check out The Night House and the new Hellraiser, because this dude has been killing these 3 for 3 as far as I'm concerned.
Like, the outsiders are just fucking it up for people that have been trying to, you know.
That situation similar to The Wicker Man, like, he stumbles upon those people are just trying to live their life. Like, they're just dealing with what they're, you know, what's in their
world. Yeah, deity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a good word, deity.
But anyway, so if you haven't seen The Ritual, it's still on Netflix.
It's so check it out.
It's fucking good. So slaps.
Great.
Is there a physical release of that yet?
Somebody made me a physical release because they love me.
I sent Brian one.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I put it on a DVD.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Because they love me.
Because they love me.
My number one, I bet nobody can guess it. But in theory, is a basic bitch pick, but I've rewatched this movie countless of times, and every single time that I watch it, I walk away loving it more. And it cemented itself once Joe picked it for a main show episode, and then everybody walked away with saying that movie is fucking amazing. And my number one is Black Christmas.
Oh, yeah. The honorable mention.
Not Black Christmas, but Christmas Evil made my honorable mentions, which is like, I thought it was weird to have a Christmas movie in my top 10 horrors, but...
Yeah, Krampus, number one. Krampus was in my honorable mentions as well, but Black Christmas, man, that movie has everything that I love about horror. Like, it's psychological, it's a slasher, it's fucking weird, it's funny, it's claustrophobic.
I've ever heard it's on film.
It has weird creative characters, like the drunk old lady, the slut shaming of Lois Lane.
Yeah.
the weird boyfriends. Like, there has so much stuff, so much meat on the bone for you to bite. It has a, again, sorry, Joe, to just close out my thought. Again, a wonderful, wonderfully fucked up ending. I love a good horror movie that has a wonderfully fucked up ending. And I just really fucking enjoy that movie. And I think it's by far one of the best horror movies ever made. And it gets often overlooked by a lot of people. And once you show it to them, they go like, oh, fuck, actually, this is a good horror movie. But I would put it at, for my tastes, I put it above a Halloween, above a Friday or above a Freddy in terms of like this, those, they tend to be lumped in because,
yeah,
but I put it aside in my head.
I mean, it has a great, antagonist in Billy.
And those
never
those
ever really get to see, do you?
No.
No.
No. You never
see the ending for me, you mentioned it. The ending for me, just the slow pan out of the fucking the rocking chair and the attic. That's what fucking gets me every time. That's what creeps me out. Is
the that person thing, sitting about, like,
up there people. The whole movie.
Yeah. The entire movie.
The first just, kill, yeah, and just never
just looking out too. The window.
Like, no one ever has that moment where they like come up and find her, and you know, it's just all.
And I feel like we've also, when we talked about this in our episode, but like, as I'm thinking about it now, like, that'd be a great edit because, like, this the same gentleman who made this movie made A Christmas Story.
And two of the best Christmas movies of all time, Bob Clark.
Yeah, Bob, the intro to A Christmas Story and then the outro to A Christmas Story, where it's the mom and dad and the pitch black, the Christmas light, Christmas tree going, and it pans out. It's almost the same fucking thing. And even the intro where it's like Bob Clark and it's the kids running out of the house. When this one's dark and it's going into that. But it's, I mean,
I'll never forget. So I chose that movie at random. I remember, I think of that episode of Flyer. I had put like a bunch of movies in a wheel and I was like, oh, cool. I had never seen this movie. So great.
Sure.
I remember it was about time, right now where it's 11 o'clock. I think it was 11, 10 o'clock, and I was like, great, time to watch the Flyer movie. And I remember it finished, and I was like, well, guess I'm going to hang out for another hour.
You calm down a little bit.
Guess I'm going to play Madden until I'm very tired.
The play makes you those are our top 10.
That's it. Top 10. That was fun. That was cool. A lot of surprises. Some favorites. Some surprises. I think those are good lists.
I'm very happy with everyone's top 10, and we all had like really some fun surprises. I know we're running really long, but what's another few minutes?
Not compared to our last episode.
Right? I just want to run off. I'm gonna run off a few honorable mentions.
Yeah, honorable mentions. Let's do it.
I'm just gonna run off what I had written, and then like you guys. So
I'm gonna post this screenshot, Joe, so you can see all my honorable mentions, my 110 movies that I wrote down.
You do that. I only have a few. One that almost made the top 10, which is another Flyover movie that we had chosen at one point, is Audition.
Ooh, that's good, yeah.
Some others are Trick or Treat, Misery, Behind the Mask, Scream, and The Blair Witch Project. Yep. And The Ring.
For me, I did Paranormal Activity, because when it first came out, scared the shit out of me.
Sure.
It 2017, I think, is.
I thought that was going to be on your list, TJ.
It's good.
Yeah, me too. List,
but I kind
of. I know we dispute the second one, but the first one everybody knows is good.
The Strangers and Scream.
Oh, nice. One of my little honorable mention things, I can't believe none of these movies made anybody's list, but this is what I was talking about as far as Terminator, Predator, and The Thing all could have been on my list.
The Thing.
And then a third of my list would have been sci-fi horror. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just kind of...
I had Alien on my list.
Obviously are all timers. House, 1977, which I just got introduced to in the last year.
So
I also had Misery and Blair Witch Project on mine. I mentioned Christmas Evil earlier. Final Destination, a couple newer ones, Upgrade and Annihilation, and then the 2021 Wrong Turn.
I had that too. Term. Brian, I consider that. There's a lot I just didn't say. I consider that too.
It's the recency thing. It's like, eh, I haven't, you know, it hasn't quite been out long enough and sat long enough to be a top 10.
I had
it's
a damn Alien. Good
movie, and man, I wish people would give it a chance.
I had Alien in my top 7.
And again, if you're wondering where movies like Alien, Omen, Amityville, Carrie, stuff that like seems like it should be on my list, please go back and check honorable my mention. Bunker episode out.
Honorable mentions. Some honorable mentions that haven't been mentioned. They Live. I have Sisters. I have Funny Games. I know that not everybody loves it. I have It Follows.
I like
Get
it.
Out.
I like It Follows.
She Dies Tomorrow. Recent one. Black Swan. Cujo. Some.
Ooh, Cujo's The Visit. Solid.
Mandy. I consider Mandy, but Mandy is more of an action.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Revenge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff right? there, though, guys. Absolutely.
Cool. Where can the people find you, Joe?
You can find me at 5% of Fear and on this channel always in Shenango 1. This is basically an episode of Fear, which I love.
yeah, if you haven't checked out the draft, it was already posted last week. Yeah. Go check it out.
A lot of fun, too. A lot of good Halloween content, baby.
A lot of good horror content. TJ.
You guys are on 5% of Film YouTube. You can find me at TJ Dex on Twitter. Am I giving my pick?
Yeah. No, give your pick.
Oh yeah, okay. Do your pick, buddy.
By the time
I forgot it's your pick.
Yeah, by the time we get to this next episode, we're gonna be out of the Halloween, you know, out of the horror in November. But I figured I'd pick this one because it's fun. It's a TJ film, and also that stupid new trailer just came out that Brian loved that I thought was dumb as hell. We're watching Super Mario Brothers.
Hell yeah, brother!
I'm excited. I'm excited for the new Super Mario Bob Brothers Hossin, animated John movie. Luke I think it's fun. And,
Dustin fun. Hopper. It's
fun.
Hoffman.
I love that pick, TJ.
That is a good TJ pick for sure. Absolutely. Brian, I don't hate it. It's not a good movie, but I don't hate it.
You can find me at Hercules. It's Halloween time, so I'm being very extra, like I was tonight. But you know, we're getting through. Amazing, it's also Hersttober. Follow the thread of movies that nobody ever likes a single tweet of.
I do. Yes. I like everyone.
That's true. Joe and my wife are very loyal in giving me the likes that I need to keep me going.
All right, everybody. Stay frightful. Bye.
Bye.